The Avengers Follow the White Rabbit is a podcast dedicated to practical politics. Practical politics is, of course, called practical politics because it is all non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is always rule-based politics. Every 2 years, every 4 years, it's basically what you do at the voting booth. And then there is full-spectrum practical politics, or engaging and taking down an opponent by any means necessary, using the rules, but never breaking the rules. But to do anything, we have to start with practical politics, and in this case, it's the art of staying on message. It's having a consistent message. And our consistent message is a mantra, or white rabbit genocide, you see on this front page. And we will also, in this podcast, engage in the geopolitical. We will talk about geopolitical events. We will talk about things from a unique white rabbit perspective. We will also go into white rabbit psychology and ecology and talk about everything you'd want to know about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. And this is, again, the Horus the Avengers, Follow the White Rabbit. In number 55, and Follow the White Rabbit 55, I'm going back over question and answers. I'm going to the wild side. I'm going to go into some really wild stuff. It gets all the ratings. Plus I get tons of questions, and it's impossible for me to email all the listeners back other than I'll get to this in a question and answer. It's a lot faster for me to talk than to email you back. And a lot of people have the same type of questions. Anytime you talk about unknown topics, where the truth, the whole truth isn't known, it becomes a little bit more provocative, and it's ripe for speculation, whether it be the Sumerian text, the Babylonian, the gods of Babylon, or Nazis. We just had another Ancient Aliens special on the, I believe it's on the History Channel. It's on the History Channel. We got the Ancient Aliens show, and we just did one, Aliens in the Third Reich. Known about it for a while. It was probably honest on some subjects. On other subjects, they repeated some propaganda. And the propaganda is, they could have got straightened out. They could have got straightened out. But to get straightened out, you got to be interested in the whole truth. Not partial truth, but the whole truth. I'm taken to task by many of the white nationalist listeners, or the more racially inclined listeners, for talking about Dr. Farrell, because Dr. Farrell isn't, he's just a normal white rabbit researcher, typical of a modern day European who's looking for the truth and has a reasonable prospect of finding it if he hasn't found it already. And I'm talking about the whole truth. But what you don't understand is that by talking about the truth, there's only one party that is ever going to benefit from that. Not necessarily me, but my race. What Dr. Farrell finds is not ultimately going to benefit anybody but my race. European children will ultimately be the beneficiaries of any truth that comes out of World War II or post-World War II, no matter where it goes. Now, you can legitimately find fault with the Nazis. Sure you can. They did a lot of crazy stuff. White nationalists that do nothing but spend most of their time talking about the Third Reich in revisionist history and that type of thing, find all kinds of fault with it. You can. And there's so much unknown. But you can't really find fault with them without finding a lot of fault with the other side, whether it be the communists, the Bolshevik elites, which are mostly Jewish. You can't find any fault there unless you start talking about the top of Anglo elites. The fact that they're on both sides. The fact that post-World War II, they've all agreed with Hitler. Jew and Gentile alike, they've all agreed with Hitler. They said, we can't peacefully coexist with European children. So we're going to try to get rid of them. That's what this whole podcast is about, white rabbit genocide. So are they any better? Now, you can do a Dr. Farrell and throw them all out the window. You can throw them all out the window. The truth, ultimately, is going to go to benefit our race. Because the truth is not stranger than, there's a saying that the truth is stranger than you can imagine. It's stranger than we can imagine, usually when it comes down to this stuff. That the whole story is a lot stranger than we can imagine. And our imaginations run wild in trying to get there. But we have this man that really can't die. We have this group that can't die. And when someone can't die, a lot of times it's a lot of bunk and a lot of these crazy newspapers trying to make money. Elvis in America died, famous singer. If you don't know who Elvis is, you can just Google Elvis, ELVIS. I assume you do, though. And when he died, there was a lot of Elvis spottings. They've kind of went away, but it sold papers. It sold papers. And when Hitler died, the same thing. There was a lot of speculation. The problem is that the History Channel is not writing whole entire shows about aliens and Elvis, because Elvis did go away. Yeah, the Elvis sightings have went away, basically. Elvis sightings eventually go away. When someone dies and there's a big conspiracy over it, eventually, like the Elvis thing, it's going to go away. But when you're dealing with this Third Reich business, this World War II business, it can't go away. It can't die. Now, part of it is ratings. I'm asked why I talk about this stuff for the same reason the History Channel talks about this stuff. It pays the bills. It pays the bills. I wouldn't have a tenth of my listeners if I didn't. I have all kinds of listeners that won't listen to any other podcast but this. They don't like a lot of white nationalist stuff for some reason. I have it, they're just not talking about the topics. They'll listen to it, but it gets for some reason this is their bill of goods. They like the Rents.com type stuff. They like the InfoWars type stuff, although he's a little bit too conspiratorial and they don't trust him anymore. Well, Alex Jones over there, but they like this type of stuff. They're interested in the whole truth. That's fine. It's fine. Different strokes for different folks. But when it comes to the truth ultimately always benefits my race. Always. Always the whole truth behind World War II will always go to benefit my race. The truth behind my enemies will always go to benefit my race. There is one consensus. White nationalists are always talked about, well, they can't agree on anything. Well, that's rabbits in general. Europeans can't agree on anything. By and large, most Asians can't agree on anything. When my ancestors first came to America, you'll find that the Indians were very individualistic a lot of ways, and they didn't agree on a whole lot with other tribes. That's kind of interracial type relationships. But white nationalists can't really agree on anything, but there's one thing they can agree on. The truth ultimately always benefits our race in regard to World War II. The whole truth. The whole truth. The challenge with most white nationalists is a lot of them, and this is a fair assessment from a lot of the alternative news and researchers, is that they throw out a lot of history, but then they actually assume that their enemy just started lying 300 years ago or 500 years ago or a couple thousand years. This stuff goes back even longer than a couple thousand years ago, which is what I first thought. Yeah, it goes back a lot older than Rome. This stuff is ancient. We're going to talk about the Sumerian text, and they or some manipulation going on even then. I'm going to talk about that. Some different ideals on that. But this aliens in the Third Reich business, this man who can't die, he's like Elvis, except they're still selling papers on the guy. The idea that I'm doing a podcast in 2010 and the topic everyone wants to hear about is Nazis and off-world type technological type stuff. All this mysticism type stuff. That's all they want to hear about. It pays the bills. This stuff gets huge ratings. They don't talk about it for no reason. And the truth is unknown. The truth is unknown as you're sitting in front of your TV and you see the sparks starting to fly in Korea. Well, actually, the fur is starting to fly, isn't it? Someone died. I don't know if it's the beginning of World War III. People always say that. It could be. I put a big question mark after that. Most likely. It's most likely. It's been getting going here for quite a while, I believe. You got a big virus released in Iran. That was probably part of the start of World War III. Big computer virus. We don't fully know. I don't know. I'm just along for the ride here, like all the White Rabbit listeners trying to figure out the truth. But Dr. Farrell has a reasonable prospect of figuring out the truth. And one of the first questions I get asked is, why wouldn't they have him on that show? The truth doesn't really benefit any party in power right now. The truth certainly doesn't benefit anyone in Hollywood. The whole truth. Because those elites are up to their neck in it. I mean, right now Dr. Farrell has a tendency, and he has a tendency to write books that piss off everybody. Which is good. If you're going to write books, piss off everybody. It's good. It's a Western tradition. Just be a Galileo. Be a heretic. Just say the earth is round. Damn it, shut up. I like that. It doesn't bother me at all. But he's got a new book coming out, and I've known about it for a while. He's talking about the JFK assassination. And in the JFK assassination, his theory will be that there are a lot more than one or two guilty parties. You have a consensus of several different parties to kill Kennedy. In other words, instead of just being the mob or the Jews, it's going to be all of the above. You know, it's going to be a whole group of people that got together and agreed that Kennedy had to go, which is kind of interesting. In other words, he's just going to piss off everybody. In Roswell and the Reich, he pisses off everybody. There is no UFOologist, if there's type of thing. I don't know if that's an official title now in colleges. If they made African American studies. African in America studies have an actual PhD ranking. Maybe they should give UFOologists a PhD. I don't know. Same type of thing, I guess many of my listeners would say. But UFOologists, it doesn't really pay the bills to say that Roswell, what landed in Roswell, is Nazis, and this is why. It doesn't pay the bills. So why aren't they having him on something like Aliens in the Third Reich, which he could talk about? Well, too dangerous. Too dangerous. The truth can be dangerous to everybody. But ultimately, it won't be dangerous for my race to learn the whole truth. Because they have to admit the whole truth in spite of what, no matter where it goes, really, is not, doesn't hurt anyone but the position, the people at power, and wherever that may go. Now, what would hurt the group being hurt the most would be the Jewish elites. Probably. I'm guessing. The group that would, and everyone in bed with them, the whole entire Anglo-American apparatus would be hurt, Israel would be hurt, many elements in Europe would be hurt, most of the world is deeply fascinated by Nazis. The only ones that believe that, in other words, if Nazis, they were to find an actual moon base of Nazis, like the movie. The movie is called Iron Sky, and if you were to look up Iron Sky and see the movie, they talk about a Nazi moon base. And it's kind of a spoof movie on Nazis. They make fun of Nazis and stuff like that. I haven't seen the movie, but they're making it right now. It's called Iron Sky, interesting enough. If there were to be such a thing, who would benefit from that? I mean, again, most of the Western world would cave in, as you know it. The Jewish elites would cave in, especially if they've been doing business with them. Because if they're out there, if the Nazis survived, and they did on some level, then who's going to be doing business with them? All the people in power now. They're just not telling us. And how can you really admit to any of that? You know, they're hiring them to do this. They're probably hiring them to do that, Jew and Gentile alike. Well, you're not going to admit to that. It makes you just as evil. You know, it's kind of like the people that always bitch about Nazis genociding people are the same ones that think it's totally okay that European children get force-blended out of existence. Well, if you're going to denounce them all, denounce them all. But don't sit here on your high and mighty Christian horse, which is usually they're Christians. Oh, Nazis are evil. It's Christian. And then they're turning around pushing miscegenation right, left, and center in only white children's churches. That's kind of odd stuff. If you're going to denounce one type of genocide, you might as well denounce it all under international law. That's what it falls under. But there's a lot of double and triple standards, but Dr. Farrell doesn't benefit anybody except European children, because he's ultimately interested in the whole truth, wherever it may go. And the truth may not be kind to whole elements of the Nazis. The truth may be not be kind to anybody. Truth has a tendency to blow everyone out of the water. Truth has a tendency to knock everything to the ground. And this whole idea that race isn't real, truth will have the tendency to say once and for all, race is real. Race is so real. Look at what these guys did. You know, look at what they believe. Look at what they're doing. But Aliens in the Third Reich was interesting, because I'm doing a Q&A on this out there subject. They talked about what Hitler was looking at legitimately. He's looking for the Aryan gods. This is what he's doing. That's what he said. That's what he did. It's kind of like when he said, I'm going to take a steel broom to the Jews. Well, pretty much what he did. You got out of Germany, or you're going to a concentration camp, or you better be like George Soros. They better think you're an Aryan, because they don't have that little Jew test yet. Yeah, they don't have that little blood test that screams, Jew! You know, like those little, they got these blood tests now that can tell your blood sugar level and stuff like that. They yell it out to you. Well, for all I know, Nazis could be sitting out there with a little blood test that says, Neanderthal! Neanderthal! You know, that's the whole theory now, that the Jews have that gene, that Neanderthal gene. I don't know. We'll see where the truth goes, but the truth doesn't benefit anybody but my race. So it doesn't really matter to me that Dr. Farrell can, he can be tough to read. He's got a lot of stuff encrypted in there, occulted, if you will. There's all kinds of stuff hidden, especially in books like Cosmic War, what he's pointing out to you. But it doesn't benefit anybody but my race, because the truth ultimately doesn't benefit anybody but us. It doesn't benefit them by having him on there. In fact, they would probably be loath to do so. They might someday. But of course, he's talking about what they really did with De Glacka. They did a whole thing on De Glacka. De Glacka, the Bell, De Glock, if you want to call it, it's called De Glacka. That's a real German title. They didn't piece it together on what all that thing did, on what all they're trying to do, on the fact that it's a beacon. They're lighting a damn beacon. That's what it does. It beacons out. It's a testing technology. It does a variety of different, it's a gateway into a new physics. But he's talking about exactly what this thing does. He lays it out. You know, he doesn't lay it out as easy as I do, but he probably expects someone like me to grab a hold of it and to talk about it. But in the gods and the aliens section, they talk about all this type of stuff. They've been talking about the Mercury vortex engines. They've been leading up to this and talking about this type of thing. And in Aliens in the Third Reich, they talk about what the Nazis were looking for. Finally, what they were looking for. What they didn't do is tell you everything about the Glacka. If they would have invited me on the show, I would have told them what exactly it does, and actually I probably could have made some phone calls and got them the exact text that validates it. The Prana text, I think they're called, or the Mahabharata. It's all over this stuff, what this thing does, what this type of physics does. You start lighting that off, you're not going to be lighting that off and not have them come visit you, whoever they are. You know, they're going to be showing up here. You don't fool around with some of this type of technology, it gets attention. Whoever's attention you want out there, you're going to be getting it. And maybe everything else that goes with it. You know, it's pretty wild stuff. So, you know, it's fascinating, because we're sitting on all these different, we're sitting on the eve of World War III, if it hasn't already started by the time you heard this. And everyone's trying to figure out, what on earth did these guys do to not die? You know, you got Elvis, and Elvis is still got himself he's still on the front cover of People magazine all the time. He's still got History Channel specials. It's provocative stuff. From a propaganda standpoint, it's unprecedented. It's unprecedented to have a dead group that won't die. And there, you know, if Elvis 50 years later, or 70 or 80 years later, still can't die, there's always a reasonable there's two probabilities. One is that someone doesn't want the story to die, and that's usually my first guess. You know, the Jews are benefiting from Elvis, so they'll keep Elvis alive because they're raising money off this stuff. But that only benefits a group like that at first. you know, we're going to keep the Nazis alive because we're raising money and we're bringing the Holocaust into Europeans' consciousness, and we want to use that to try to wipe them out or to try to justify flooding the place with non-Europeans, which is what they've done. They use the Holocaust as a whipping rod. In America, even, we went to World War II and pretty much saved them. Yeah. If we didn't go to World War II, they wouldn't be around. I don't think anyone disagrees with that. But anyways, they use this all over the place to try to destroy European children. That's what they're using it for. But, so Hitler, having Hitler around at first, having the Third Reich around, talking about it endlessly benefits the Jews at first. But sooner or later, it doesn't. Sooner or later, you gotta ask, you know, did Elvis not die? I mean, if they're still talking about Elvis 70 years from now that he didn't die, there's two probabilities. One, that someone's keeping this alive to make money, or two, maybe he didn't die. Maybe we don't know the whole story behind Elvis's death. That's always not a possibility, but a probability. Because someone's benefiting from keeping Elvis alive in the media. Sooner or later, it doesn't benefit the Jews to keep this stuff coming back around. It just doesn't benefit them. It doesn't benefit them when the little Vietnamese children want a swastika t-shirt. It doesn't benefit the Jews. Because that will always be associated with being anti-Semitic. Sorry, it will. For better or worse. And so the question is, to answer your question, they will never have a Dr. Farrell on that until there's a remake of the media, because he's interested in the truth, and the truth doesn't serve certain parties. I talk about outrageous stuff, and I'll tell you exactly where this stuff goes if it is true. It goes out there. It goes off-world. That isn't bad for my race. It might be bad for some others, but it isn't bad for my race. And so that's why I'm interested in the whole truth, and his books are the only ones that spell it out in a way that anyone can decipher. It just is a little more work. I've always said if you write the only thing more dangerous than writing some of the books he's written is if you were to write a how-to book on how to read them. You'd probably get a visit faster than he got a visit. You'd probably get watched a lot more than he gets watched. But, I'll tell you exactly what he's pointing out, exactly what he's saying, and it's not any different than they're talking about in 2010, and, gods and aliens on the History Channel, all this type of stuff. This is the particular pathway. And where it goes, I don't know. We're going to find out. We're going to get phase one here right after this big shindig they want to get on. And, of course, you got all the parties guilty. That's the problem with the Nazis. You have a lot of guilty parties. A lot of guilty parties. No one has their hand clean. Not the Jewish elites. They'd probably be more guilty. Why would you do business with someone like that? The Anglo banking elites, they're another group. But of course, exactly where it all goes. Well, we'll go back into Babylon on the show. We'll talk about that type of thing. But you can legitimately say that there are no good parties here. There are no good parties in World War II. There are no good parties, and there are no righteous people at the top of the planet right now. You could legitimately say that. I'll agree with that to some extent. You could say there are no nice people at the top of communism. But sitting there ripping on the Nazis while presenting yourself as some version of holier than thou when they turn around and try to wipe out European children, agreeing with Hitler right afterwards, well, I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear about it. It's kind of like someone who goes all, the far left always goes out of their way, especially the self-hating white, the WASP set. Or, I don't know, it's more than just the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants in America. It's the whole entire white elite. They coo and caw over adopting little Africans and everything else. And then they go around and then they denounce anyone as racist who says otherwise. Anyone's a racist who doesn't think their daughter should be force-bred to them. All this other kind of grisly stuff they come up with, and they shove it down everyone's throat, Jew and Gentile alike. None of them complain about it, so I assume they all agree with it. But, they would never in a million years talk honestly about the crime these groups commit. Many of my listeners aren't racially inclined. That's fine. But all you have to do is hit some of those links and look up The Color of Crime. All you have to do is read it. And if you can justify letting those type of crimes be committed day in and day out against European children, you're not a moral person. And you can't call yourself a Christian or anything else. It's true. You can't really call yourself a moral person and justify that level of violence against a group of children who have done nothing. They've done nothing. No white kid born today has done anything against any African. Quite the opposite. Quite the opposite. So now you have a minority group who commits half the violent murders, who's basically all in jail, but no one ever talks honestly about it, except maybe the white racialists, the white nationalists. But, you know, everything's justified. The genocide, everyone's complicit in the genocide of European children. That's why Bob Whitaker, I always liked Bob Whitaker, because he wrote A Plague on Both Your Houses. You're both complicit in this. You both think that, you know, Democrats, Republicans, they both think this is okay. Yeah, it doesn't matter whether you're an evangelical preacher in the South. You're both, you know, they don't say anything about not adopting African children. They don't say anything about the black crime rate. They don't. And, of course, some of it is just because they're cowards. Some of it is just because they're brainwashed. Some of it is just because of peer pressure. They don't want problems from the government. But I don't want to hear about any of the white nationalists talking about it, because to not talk about it is basically to justify genocide. That's really what you're justifying, because that's a program in place. It's a program in place to hurt them and to wipe them off the planet, and they're just using Africans. But instead they talk about poor little Africans and poor little this. It's like poor little Jews when they don't look at the Jewish elites themselves. It's like talking about poor little Jews in the World War II without talking about the evil Anglo elites who were doing deals with the Nazis right, left, and center, the evil Anglo elites who sponsored communism, who wiped out so many Slavic Russians. I mean, you can be objective about it. You can be objective and say, you know, we should have a multicultural, multiracial country, but they should be based on the Singapore and Dubai's, and we should allow freedom of association. You know, it shouldn't be an only white countries, and it shouldn't be obviously so destructive toward European children. You can say that. But what's funny is the only ones that believe that are probably non-whites living in European countries. None of the European elites will say it. Except maybe the Germans in 2010 are starting to say stuff like that, and some other groups, and of course us. Yeah, we're here. But before I go on too many tangents, we'll get the show on the road. But I don't really take any of the high and mighty stuff against any of the racialist groups, no matter who they are, no matter how wild their opinions are. As long as it's law abiding, you should always obey the law, because the other side is just as bad. I don't take any criticism of the Third Reich really all that serious, unless it's someone who criticizes every single group at top. Every single group, unless they criticize communism, unless they criticize the Anglo elites wholesale. Because they agreed with the Nazis. So why should I listen to your criticism when your criticism assumes that the other side's better? Or good? No, they're not. They're up to their neck in a genocide. Themselves. So that's like saying, you know, Nazis are good, Nazis are bad, Jews are good. Well, Jewish elites are up to their neck in a genocide. And there would be a lot more Jewish elites hanging in tribunals than there ever was Nazis. Believe it. They do. That's why most people don't hear about this type of show or this conversation. It's a very honest conversation. But the truth doesn't ultimately benefit anybody but our race. Heaven forbid there were Nazis on the moon. Heaven forbid they may be the ultimate picture of evil on some level. The problem with that is the other side's no better. That is the general problem. And another thing is, it would once and for all prove how real race is. Everyone would sit stupefied. Imagine if that were true one morning. How stupefied would the world be? You know, the non-whites would be laughing and singing. They would think it's funny. The Palestinians would be inviting them to solve their race problem, the Jews. And, of course, most of the white liberals would be shaken to the ground that we got to go fight them. Most of the white nationals would be laughing. At first they'd laugh, they'd sit in shock, and then they'd say, Hail Hitler. It would be rather entertaining, the reaction from the planet. Very entertaining stuff. But it ultimately, the truth would ultimately go to benefit our race. Yeah, would ultimately on some level go to benefit our race, because most of what happened after World War II would fall to pieces. How can the Jewish elite spin that? Well, they can't spin it. They couldn't spin it. You can't spin it. That basically what you're saying is you lost World War II on some level. That they didn't defeat the enemy. That race is real. That equality doesn't exist. If equality existed in nature, where are all the black rabbit colonies on the moon? Right? It's kind of funny stuff. But I don't really mind someone interested in the whole truth, as long as they're legitimate about it. Where I have problems with a lot of these types, whether it be the World War II types or the so-called anti-racists, whether they're just anti-white, whether it be the evangelical preacher and in the South, or who knows, some Canadian official. Well, they're justifying genocide themselves. So they can't, you can't claim that you're some high and mighty moral person. I mean, you can't justify that level of violence that reports like the Color of Crime. They point out time and time again the type of violence against European children. This program isn't about it. I don't go into that. There's whole websites full of that stuff. It's simply true. If it wasn't necessary, the websites wouldn't exist because the media doesn't talk about it. It doesn't benefit them to talk about it. It doesn't benefit them to talk about a genocide against European children. It just doesn't, because most of them are complicit in it. And silence is always concurrence. Yes, it is. Especially among the elites. Especially among the Anglo elites. Yes. But the truth doesn't really benefit anyone in power. The truth about the whole Third Reich doesn't benefit anyone. I would go on and tell them exactly what the Glocka. Tell them all about the Glocka. What I believe about it. And it would be a provocative show. Sure it would be. I'd sit there all for the cost of a mantra. All for the small cost of a mantra. Yeah, I wouldn't even have to give my website. Eventually they would find out. All I'd do is say, follow the white rabbit. And I'm number 5 on the Google search. Number 5. It's kind of funny. I didn't do that. You did it. Thank you. But yeah, you just got to hit follow the white rabbit and you'll find me, even if you're blind. Funny stuff. But the truth does not benefit anybody but our race. And there are people that never, ever want to do anything to help or benefit white children. The funny thing is, they're all white or they all look white, Jew and Gentile alike. And I call them all pink rabbits. And we got 3 words for them. You gotta go. Yes, you do. And as it starts heating up on this planet, that's what you're coming to conclude too. That you've gotta go. You better do something. And so on this show, I've ranted enough. But don't email me. And you get these type of emails. Every white nationalist does. Everyone white who cares will. Yeah, if you're white and you care and you say something, you will get these emails from these high and mighty white elite liberals. Most of them liberal or so-called conservatives. Not all of them are that elite. But, you know, clinging to their Bible, saying that, oh, this is horrible and evil. Is it? Is it? To me, horrible and evil is telling lies. Nothing but lies, day in and day out, about this so-called race problem. To me, the ultimate picture of evil is bringing in another group of people that are just engaged in total ethnic conflict with us, whether it be the Mexicans or Africans. To me, evil is totally lying about their crimes they commit every single day. But the truth of crime, the truth of World War II, the truth of the Nazis, no matter how dark, no matter how ominous, will only go to benefit our race. Even the truth about something like the Holocaust, I don't talk about that. I don't talk about the revisionist history going on there because that's already covered somewhere else. There's also another reason. You know, anytime they're pretty much all in jail. Some of my listeners might not know that, but they're all in jail. You write a book about the Holocaust, questioning maybe Auschwitz. What does the wiki say? 1.1 million instead of 1.1 million die in there. You question that by maybe 100,000 or 300,000. Either way, we can go to jail in Germany for a long, long time. You question. You say, well, 6 million didn't die, 5 million, 8 die. You go to jail in Germany instantly for that. And you know that's the point Ahmadinejad makes. Anytime any government king potentate makes it illegal to dispute a fact. Especially under punishment of jail time or death, that fact has always proven to be a lie by history. You know, that's the ugly side of things. When you start throwing people in jail for writing books, most of the world's going to have a problem with it. That's just the way it works, and 90% of the world's non-European, maybe more than that. So that's why Ahmadinejad has his point. You know, I don't have to. Nature makes the point on that for me. I'm not an expert on that, but you can hit the links. You can hit the links on my front page, and you can find some experts. You can find all the different stuff about the Holocaust and all the different controversial things. I sit here neither here nor there off that, other than they're in jail. Other than any time a government throws someone in jail for writing a book, just the book simply disputing a fact, that fact usually turns out to be a lie. In fact, not usually, always. History always, always, always is brutal to oppressed facts. History is always brutal to any truth that gets oppressed. So they would be a lot better off just to let them write the books, because hell, I don't even think I would know about it. Wouldn't know about the first thing you know about any Holocaust revisionism, any revisionism during World War II, is they're all in jail. The type of revisionists I talk about is stuff that they just don't want you to know about. They haven't made laws. Can you imagine making a law against talking about the Third Reich surviving? Well, I guess then they could throw the Dr. Farrells in jail. But his books aren't published in German, I don't think. I don't think he's published in German yet. It'd be a little dicey. Some of his stuff would be a little too dicey under European laws. But, you know, again, the truth only benefits my race. No matter where you go with it, it'll ultimately benefit my race or liberate us from our own evil pink rabbit elites, whoever they are, wherever they're sitting, whatever planet they're on, whatever planet they're from. I don't care. They got to go. So that's why I don't, that's why it ultimately, I will talk about anyone looking for the truth that I think is legitimately and has a reasonable prospect of finding it based on their skill set. I don't have a problem with it. Ultimately, there's a lot of double standards flying around in Western civilization, to say the least. And ultimately, that won't be good, because you don't want to have double standards around my race. As this podcast goes up, there's another one on white rabbit psychology and ecology, and I'm going to talk about some stuff. I'm going to talk about some stuff, funny stuff, interesting stuff. I'm going to talk about all about us. I don't talk about the little black rabbits because we're not black rabbits. I don't talk about the Mexican rabbits because we're not Mexican rabbits. Not that that's not valid. Some other racialists, that's all they talk about. But you got to have someone talking about us, what we're doing over there at Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar. We basically talk about us. And us is an important topic. So now that I've ranted even longer, let's go on with this question and answer, and let's talk about these crazy questions I get asked. And some of them are legitimate. Some of them, it's all crazy stuff to me. All this stuff is out there. It's out there. And it goes out there, and it won't ever come back. Once you go out there and take an objective look at it, it will never come back. I first looked at it from a standpoint of propaganda. Once you learn about propaganda, once you learn a little about media, you got a group that can't die. There's two reasons for it. One, it benefits someone. That was my first impression. But sooner or later, it doesn't benefit someone. Sooner or later, you got to assume there's another probability. They haven't died because they're not dead. That's kind of common sense. Hard to swallow, but common sense. So let's get the show on the road. Let's talk about it, and I'll answer your questions about my opinions on the Sumerian texts and stuff about the Galaka, all kinds of different things. But that little man, Adolf Hitler, and if it has anything to do with him, or some group in Nazi Germany, or some groups colluding in Nazi Germany with other parts of Western civilization, did something extraordinary. They did something with the Galaka that would get you to the truth. If, you know, it would ultimately get you to the truth if there is any such thing. They're going to find out. You're going to do it. That's exactly what you want to do if you want to find out the truth and the whole truth. And so let's go down this road. And now a word from our sponsor. Have you ever said to yourself, gee, I would love an undercover lover? Or maybe you said to yourself, gee, I would like to be an undercover lover. We know exactly how you feel. For a limited time only, on WhiteRabbitRadio.net, you can buy an undercover lover. You can be an undercover lover. Yes, for only 25 carats. It is a great investment, because all the money goes to fight white rabbit genocide, which is the thing we're about here at WhiteRabbitRadio.net. So if you're looking for an undercover lover, or if you're looking to be an undercover lover, or if you're just looking to have the coolest undercover lover in the history of the undercover lovers, we have just the ticket for you, all at a very, very low price. Yeah, so hop on over there and pull up that merchandise tab. And when you see the undercover lover, you'll go wild at how beautiful it is. And hit that buy button. Support fighting white rabbit genocide in the easiest way possible. Be an undercover lover. Everything goes back to World War II as well, what the Nazis were looking at. And that's what I'm going to talk about next. We're going back into Babylon. We're going to talk about pink rabbit elitesters, what I really think. I'm going to answer questions about, you know, this podcast has said something very provocative. I told you Enlil in the Babylonian pantheon was no less than Zeus and Woden and Indra and the Kantisi Viracocha, or some call them Kantiki. I talked about the Anokai, or the Anunnaki, whatever your flavor is you want to call them. But that doesn't mean blonde hair, blue eyes. I never said that. I said it means those that came down. I told you that there's always been questions about Babylon. We went into Egypt. We haven't really went into what the question is. I'm going to go into that now with sight and sound. I'm going to show you some pictures because some guys on Stormfront have asked some questions, and I will answer their questions. I was waiting for someone to find it and answer it. We're going to talk about Sitchin a little bit more, and I'm going to go here and there, and I'm going to talk about some different theories because there's a lot unknown. There are thousands and thousands of texts unknown. And some facts have come out. What fact has come out? Well, on the ancient aliens, the Purana or the Mahabharata, one of the ancient Indian texts, it has come out on ancient aliens what they actually say about different alien species. And this is what gets crazy. See, when you start looking at this objectively as a cynic, which is what I was, basically I'm a cynic, you start getting hit with ancient texts. You start getting hit with little figurines. You start getting hit with things, and it can be overwhelming that, you know, I should have known this was out there. But there was over, in the ancient Indian texts, it states, and no one knows really how old they were. They guesstimate that they were transcribed several thousands of years ago, but no one knows how old the stuff that they're talking about actually is. And we're going to go into some of that as well. But they talk about over 400,000 alien species, or different various types of two arms, two legs, Homo sapien type species. Not necessarily Homo sapien, but things like us, over 400,000. And so I got asked some questions about the Nazi rabbits and what they were looking for, and wanted me to go into some more detail. And I was waiting for the questions, and now there's questions. I'll give you the answers, or at least from my perspective. I was also asked a very direct question. A lot of this can get very, very confusing. Can you simplify it for us? Yeah, I can get very simple. Whatever's here will die. Whatever's coming here will kill it, and explain it to us what's happened. I'm going to repeat that. Whatever's here dies, and whatever's coming here will tell us what's happened and explain it to us after they kill them. Because coming to this world would be outright killing machines. Now, your first question is going to be, out of the 400-some-thousand alien species, how many of these are Aryan, or how many of these look like us? Quite a number. There's quite a number of advanced species that look similar to us. I the number isn't hundreds of thousands, but it's in the thousands. We have cousins. What the Nazis believed, and they were reading this stuff well over 100 years ago, preparing elements in the German fraternal system, the German secret societies, quote unquote, were reading this stuff. And what they were looking for, what Hitler was looking for, is what he told the world he was looking for. What they were looking for, what the Germans were looking for, ultimate Aryan origins. And they were also looking for one particular side of this pantheon. And they were willing to do a whole lot to do that. And that comes into the Glock. And of course, on the Ancient Aliens, on the History Channel, they're talking about the whirling Mercury vortex motors. And yes, they figured that out. The Glock, this bell-shaped thing, was a gateway testing technology. But one thing that's clear in these texts they're talking about, that they're not talking about on Ancient Aliens, at least not yet. They may very well come out with exactly what I've told you. You start setting this stuff off, you're going to get people that come and see who you are and what you are. Because this is technology unique to our race. It's what it basically says. It's unique to us. Different types of races or super races, whatever you want to call it in Nazi terms, at a certain point in their evolution are going to try to develop this technology. But there's only one way we're going to develop it. And what the Nazis are doing is trying to mimic their technology of this paleo-ancient high civilization. And basically the rest of this podcast, if you haven't listened to every one of these podcasts, this is going to be a waste of your time. It's going to be a waste of your time. So you might want to turn it off. But if you heard every one of these podcasts, well, then I'm going to answer some more questions and go into some more of this stuff. But what Ancient Aliens, what they're starting to show you on TV is the whirling Mercury vortex motors, the different texts of India, what's coming out, the fact that they believe Zeus is Wotan, well, he is. They haven't told you who he's a nil. they haven't talked about any dates. They haven't talked about things like when they'd be coming back or what the Nazi. They haven't put it all together for you like I've tried to do. And truth, I don't have some divine truth. I can only point in a direction, but I can simplify it for you. Whatever's coming here will kill whatever's here, and if something's coming here, something's here. Whatever's here will die. Its children will die. Anything they don't like will die, and then they'll explain it to us. It's that simple. And no one will be arguing with them because they have technological superiority. It just doesn't work that way. But the Nazis were looking for ultimate Aryan origins. And the question was, well, might they have found something else? Well, of course. You know, I never said the Anukai or what. All that means is those that came down. That's the term used in Babylon. And there are other things that came down, too, and we're going to go into that. But that's what they're looking for. They're looking for this winning side of the pantheon, and can become difficult to find a winning side of the pantheon simply because they're making so many deals, or coming to terms, rules of engagement, coming to different deals, and also the timelines. The timelines are far out there. Sitchin packs his timelines real close. Well, Sitchin's now dead. He died on October 9th, but his timelines are not going to be correct. Some of them may be, but most of them won't be. Also, there are some unknowns, and we're going to come back to this. I'm going to go into it, and I'm going to cover this. And this may go long, but I'm going to try to cover all those Q&As because it's what I try to do. It's impossible to return emails, but usually I return an email and say I will cover this. I will talk about this in some way, shape, manner, form, so you'll get my opinion. One of the challenges with the Babylonian texts is there's so much missing. There's so much the Germans have that no one else has. To do it right, you'd have to go from Babylon, like the Germans did, through Egypt, go into ancient India, and then end up in South America. I thought it was interesting on Ancient Aliens, they talked about the Indian gods flying from South America to ancient India. I thought that was interesting. They were talking about this in the whirling Mercury Vortex motors. I thought it was interesting how they're telling you that Woden is Zeus. But what they're not telling you is what these little Nazis tried to do. They're not just looking for him, they're looking for ultimate Aryan origins. So might they have found out something? Well, they found out something. They've done something. And we are now seeing a lot of people believe that I trust that we're seeing the beginning. I haven't seen enough to talk about, haven't seen enough for the world to sit stupefied, but one morning that'll happen. Everything will catch up. Everything catches up, and we're going to find out exactly what they did. I don't know exactly what they did, other than it's far out there. And it's coming close to home, and it's coming soon. We'll see the signs of it right during this next war and immediately after, and that's going to happen very soon. I don't have any dates on it, but let's go through this process, and I'll try to cover all this because it's a complicated subject matter, but I can simplify it for you. It's as simple as the Book of Revelations. Whatever's here dies, its children dies, and a lot of other things dies, and whatever's coming here kills it and then explains to you what's going on. It's that simple, because we are blind, deaf, and dumb. Yes, we are. So that's what the Nazis believed. They were looking for ultimate Aryan origins, and that's what they were looking at these texts, and they were looking at the white gods, the Aryan gods. They wanted to go talk with them. They were looking for one group in particular that showed an interest in Cro-Magnon, and that group is who you think of as Zeus. They believed he was real. They didn't believe he was some myth. And they didn't read the myth straight on, although they, in some ways they can be read straight on. They looked at them from a radical different perspective. But we're going to start this process, and I'll try to go through this to you and try to get all those questions done. When it comes to the Sumerian text, I got an ace in the hole on most listeners. I know who they would be if it were true. I know who they are in Western mythology. Or I have some good idea who the good side would be, or who the side would be that would be coming to help us, or depending on how you look at things. Yeah, I got an ace in the hole on that. Most listeners have never heard that Enlil was Zeus. Well, most of them never probably asked. Zeus is Odin, and Enlil would be him. I don't know what he was like 65 million years ago or 3.5 million years ago. I can't get my head around that. Many of the events in the Sumerian texts are ancient beyond ancient. They're not hundreds of thousands of years old. Some of them are millions of years old. I don't understand it. I'll be the first to tell you that. I just know the direction of truth goes, direction of truth will go if there is any direction to it. And that you're dealing with the most modern mythology, the most recent mythology would be Norse and the Greeks. And on the Great History Channel special, Ancient Aliens, they talk about Zeus being Odin. That's correct. they don't tell you that this is a nil. It would certainly help the discussion a little, wouldn't it? Well, that's what I'm here for. That's what I'm here for, to help the discussion. Doesn't mean it's true. I'm just telling you the direction. But anyways, this little group of Nazis wanted to talk to Odin, or someone there wanted to talk to Odin, or someone there wanted to get someone else's attention. We're going to go into some different questions I've been asked about this, and I'll give you my ideals on it. The truth, the whole truth is unknown, and the whole truth will be stranger than you imagine. It'll be stranger than we can imagine, probably. But that's the direction it goes. It goes out there. Assuming that mythological deities are, in fact, true is, I guess it's very White Rabbit-ish. It's really crazy. Lighting beacons to resurrecting a technology that belonged to a paleo-ancient civilization that they ran or that they were part of becomes a little more interesting, a little more provocative. Resurrecting something like that. It becomes more provocative. The idea that they wouldn't even dream it up or believe that or do it is, well, it's very white. You can't really predict our behavior because we're nuts. Yeah, we're nuts, but a good kind of nuts. Anyways, I was asked some direct questions, and I've done this section more than one occasion because this is a very difficult topic, and I've redone this particular podcast you're going to hear. It's a difficult thing to go down because there are so many unknowns. I keep things simple. I know that someone that would be our benefactor, if you will, for better or worse. You know, many people, when I say the name God, they assume some big booming voice, some big ball of plasma that could make the universe A-OK. Well, God is a particular title in the Sumerian epics. God is a title in the Greek epics, the Greek mythology. God is basically Odin's title on some level, although it doesn't come out that way in the Norse mythology. He doesn't call himself God, the Lord of Heavens, like he does in the Greeks. Zeus is God, the Lord of Heavens. Pretty interesting title. His brother is Lord God of Seas, and that's Poseidon. I told you that Ea is Poseidon. That's very, very controversial. I'll tell you again also that even more confusing is that Kronos, in the original battle, when Poseidon's talking in the Odyssey, and he said, well, you know, the last time I revolted against Zeus, I fell for 7 days and seven nights. He's talking about the original battle. In that original battle, he plays the part of Kronos, which becomes very, very confusing, doesn't it? It becomes very confusing when you go down this road. And there are those that ask how I come to this conclusion. Well, I just match the titles up. When in doubt, go to Greece. When in doubt, come back to the basics. When the water's polluted, you go back to the source and draw fresh water. We know a lot more about Greek mythology than we do Sumerian. There's no missing text in the Odyssey. There's been translated time and time again, so you can get some idea. Now, there's certain ways, there's certain things that are trying to tell us something, and there's certain parts of it that would be read straight on, like you're reading any other book. It's pretty interesting stuff, very interesting stuff. And obviously, kind of provocative. In 2010, anyone that's read the Sumerian text, this podcast becomes very, very provocative because you realize you might have missed something. And there's a lot missing in the Sumerian text to let you come to that conclusion. But I'll answer all these questions, and I can do so briefly. I'm going to make it brief. There are very, very many unknown things, obviously, when you walk down this road. There's minefields upon minefields. What you're doing is trying to curve fit documents where not the whole truth is known, especially when this Sumerian stuff. You're trying to curve fit something ancient into what would be the deal right now. We can't really comprehend something 100,000 years ago, much less a million or 65 million. We can't comprehend the type of technology these guys have or their abilities. I was asked, they're not human, they're superhuman. Well, that's true. Then they're superhuman because of technology. Right. But that's one hell of a statement. It's one hell of a statement. You're dealing with a pretty advanced technology and a pretty advanced race that produces it that would be seeding another race to produce it as well and seeding the race to have their DNA on some level. You see anything on this planet, because if you believe something like that is out there, you better believe that something here is with us. You can't have one without the other. That's the problem. That's the challenge here. So Christians have one thing right. The devil's loose in the world. No doubt about that. They would have that right. But where they have, where you get into this is who's the devil. Well, Zeus ain't all that bad. The other side, obviously, there's something wrong with it. Whatever's here with us would obviously be positively evil, especially for my race, or actually anything else. But whatever's here would be operating in a vacuum. Whatever's here would be operating in a vacuum. It doesn't have anyone to answer to. It doesn't really care about anything other than it tends to, whatever it is, it tends to try to make sure we make poor choices. In other words, we're given a choice, but they try to give us the worst choice available or the choose between two poor choices, kind of like Democrats and Republicans. You know, choose Democrat or Republican. Well, they're both poor choices in this particular election. It tries to do stuff. It tries to let us make a choice, but it's a horrible choice. It would be down some that angle, but it basically would have nothing to lose. Would have nothing to lose. Whatever's not here would have a whole lot to lose. Because as I just told you, as Ancient Aliens pointed out, the Nazis were looking for ultimate Aryan origins because there's one more than one group here. And if you want the way, the truth, and the light, all you got to do is light up their technology. Someone's going to come and check you out. And they're going to tell you what the truth is. You know, I mean, even in the series V, if you want to go into aliens, even in the series V about these reptilian aliens that look human, that can wear human skin and stuff like that, there are a good bunch of them that are fighting them, that they don't find the behavior to be moral. There's going to be good and evil in all things, good and bad in all things. But anyways, the reason I come to the conclusion that there's the direct question is, Enki is always presented as some ultimate benefactor of humans. You know, if you read the Sitchin stuff, which is kind of interesting, he invented the blonde-haired, blue-eyed babies and all kinds of interesting stuff. We didn't invent anything. Most of these guys are blonde-haired, blue-eyed. You know, they're Aryans. Period. End of discussion. So on one end, Sitchin will write about something like that, which is a translation, and some of the translations can be up in the air. On the other end, he'll turn around and say that there's no such thing, no such word as Aryan or something like that. Instead of saying, well, the word is kind of controversial, but he'll turn around and say that. So it's kind of interesting. I don't trust Sitchin. I don't trust his translations. That's what I'm telling you. Because when a racialist reads Sitchin stuff, you immediately assume that Ea would be the father of the Aryans. He is not. He is not. Just because some baby has blonde hair, blue eyes, and Ea was involved or something like that, that don't mean anything. And second, the other thing that is always presented as Enlil is the evil one who caused the flood. But there's no evidence that Enlil ever caused any flood. There's no evidence of that, necessarily. And of course, the floods are always, they're always political. They're always political. All the disasters become political in the epics. Yeah, it does. One of the gods is displeased, or a group of them is displeased, so they wreak havoc. But in this particular piece, I talk about Enlil, that he's not all that bad. At least Zeus isn't. He's not perfect. He's not a god in the sense you think he is, but you wouldn't be able to tell the difference. We wouldn't be able to tell the difference. If we were related to anyone, it would have to be him, Odin, whatever you want to call him. He's not the ultimate picture of righteousness. He's kind of a funny guy. The Dagda, as he plays the Dagda in Celtic mythology, is pretty cool. He can have some bad days. He can hit you with a lightning bolt, but of course, you don't die anyways. Yeah, we can't die. You see, everyone assumes one assumption, they don't take a series of assumptions. You'll just be on the fields of Asphodel, or maybe you got lucky, maybe this is your third birth, and you hit that Elysium, get those Blessed Isles, or what the Irish used to call Irish Fairyland. Wouldn't that be a cool place to go to when you die? Or maybe you get that fields of punishment, like those crazy white anti-whites are gonna get. You know, they're gonna be liberals and they're gonna be up to their knees in sewage and running from Africans. All hell is full of white liberals running from Africans, having to live with Jews for eternity and all that kind of stuff like that. Kind of funny. But anyways, but when you get into this assumption, you have to make a series of other assumptions. And so, one of the main reasons that I talk about Dr. Farrell's books is because something he does in Cosmic War, which is honest. He does something very honest. And he starts the process on page 147. Well, he starts the process from the beginning to the end. But he is showing you something. Showing you something that is rather provocative. Rather provocative. He's showing you that you have slaughtered a god together with his intelligence, and that's Enlil to Enki. This is Zeus to Poseidon, basically, as I read it. You must create a flood. It is indeed your power that shall be used against your people. Well, that's a fascinating statement from Enlil to Enki. What he's saying is Poseidon, you must kill your children with your own power. You remember Poseidon's the god of the seas. He controls the flood stuff. That's on his side of the pantheon. He's saying you must use your power against your children. Now, never mind, we don't know when this happened or even if it happened on this planet. We don't know that. You don't know anything once you walk into this. But one thing I do know who these characters would be. And what he's saying is your power against your people. Well, we're not his people. So how do I get away with saying that Anil, it's quite simple. We're not Inki's children. That's what I'm telling you. We're not, unless you're a Cyclops or a wicked giant. That's the only thing his children in the Odyssey. And let's talk about this character in the Odyssey, even if it's just a metaphor. He's running around persecuting Odysseus simply because he defended himself against one of his children, Polyphemus, who was eating his buddies. He was eating his buddies, put out the big giant's eye. And he said, oh, okay, gave Odysseus absolute hell. Even Poseidon has benefactors. He's the benefactor of the Phaeacians, does them nice, builds all kinds of nice stuff for these little Phaeacians. But just for helping out Odysseus, which he never told them not to do, but just for helping out Odysseus, he sinks their ships. Oh, wonderful. This guy's a demon. Now, granted, he's the dark side of the equation. Granted, I'm being a little rough on him since there's a lot of unknowns here. But he doesn't sound nice even to have him as a benefactor. He's a wild card. What side of the equation is he on? He's on the dark side of the equation. You know, you sacrifice those black bulls to him. He doesn't sound all that wonderful. He'd be the god of the wicked giants. So what, I mean, we know Zeus is considered the father of God-man. That's his title. His title is God the Lord of Heavens. Odysseus doesn't really have to pay homage to Zeus. He doesn't have to offer first fruits to him or anything like that. I mean, he does have to offer it to Zeus. Yeah, the Greeks were into first fruits and all that stuff. The Jews didn't invent that. But anyhow, we're not his children. How do I get off saying Anil's not responsible? Well, Anil's not responsible for flying us because we're not his children. I mean, we're not Inki's children. He's telling Inki, you have to kill your children use your power against your own people. Well, we're not his people. We're not his people. Even if maybe he were a benefactor of the Phaeacians, he's not considered their father. Their father's considered Zeus. Their father, you know, he's considered the father of God and man. So that's where I get that, you know. In the Norse mythology, Loki, which is Inki, Loki's a trickster, a con artist. He has two children, one serpent and one wolf. And he's a trickster, he's a prankster. You could say he's the dark side of the equation, but he's a wild card. The Greek epics, Poseidon comes off as a wild card. He's good, but then just flip a coin on this one. Flip a coin on this one. It's interesting that Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief was a book, and it's a book series I would recommend for all the little white rabbits. It's fascinating. It is fascinating stuff. Because Poseidon in it is Percy Jackson's father. It's Perseus Jackson's father. And he finds out Poseidon isn't all that wonderful. It's kind of like a bad joke. But what's even more interesting is that a dark ominous force has resurrected himself. And that dark force is Kronos. And Kronos is stirring in Tartarus, working out deals with other gods. And Kronos, of course, goes back to the first battle in the solar system. And Kronos, of course, in some level, you're dealing with Ea or Inki on some level. And so it becomes one big, they don't call it the mysteries for no reason, do they? Yeah, fascinating stuff. In other words, Kronos would be Poseidon on some level before he fell 7 days and seven nights, as he said. But it is a mystery trying to figure out all this stuff. I got a shortcut. I keep it simple. I know whatever's righteous certainly isn't here. It certainly isn't here. And it wouldn't make sense for any of the side of that pantheon unless they were trapped here and cut a deal with the other side to be involved in something like this. Because anything not here is not going to be operating in a vacuum. You're going to have to answer some people. Right? I mean, after all, their pantheon is connected to other pantheons. We already know that there's more than one group of these. If there's one group of these, like the Olympians, there's others out there. And they're not necessarily going to approve of that. Because guess what? Our DNA would have ties to them as well, and a DNA stores a lot of information. They're not going to like that. But it's kind of common sense. I mean, Anil, the Anilites, grant man, there's three sections of land for the three different parts of the human family. Now, where they are and what they are, I'm not quite certain. But he's not going to grant them land with borders. In other words, we have land indefinite, inviolate, that we're not supposed to be messed with. He's not going to go around setting all this stuff up and then try to blend them out of existence. It doesn't make any sense. Phoebus Apollo, there's a lot of controversy. I said Phoebus Apollo may be an Inerta. I don't know that for sure. Some think he's Adad. Some think he's from one of these other pantheons. But Phoebus Apollo had the priests of Apollo who weren't even allowed to have crooked teeth. He's not going to walk around all of a sudden and turn the world upside down and destroy everything he helped build and then walk around and try to blend them up. And I don't see them as total control freaks necessarily. You make choices, and those choices have consequences. In fact, I'm guessing they're doing us a favor by helping us out. I can't imagine him not having better things to do because we're a tough bill of goods. We're a lot of work building us stuff, helping us out. It's a lot of work, a lot of responsibility. And unless you're here and ultimately evil and operating in a vacuum, well, you're going to have other parties to answer to. It's that simple. So I can't imagine them having anything to do with this nonsense. I can't imagine that. I just can't imagine that. But he does have a particular quality, and that quality comes out in the Odyssey. And I'll talk about that at the end. At the end of this, I'll talk about that. His quality. They may have spies here. Sure. It may be like I'll talk about it now. How about that? It may be like in the Odyssey when Odysseus is walking around and God's daughter, Pallas Athena turns him into a bum. He looks like a bum. And Odysseus' house is being overrun by these parasites. And they're sitting there, they're leeching off him. They're eating all his stuff. And he has these servant girls who are whores, who are conspiring with the evil suitors. What do they want to do? They want to marry Odysseus' wife so they can inherit all his property. Why? Because they think Odysseus is dead. But instead of sitting in their own houses and sending her love letters, they're in his house and they're feeding off him. They're eating all his cattle and all kinds of other stuff. And so these suitors are sitting there and Pallas Athena, God's daughter, the goddess of the gray eyes. She basically disguises him as a bum. And Odysseus is walking through his house, and he's a serious fighter. And he's walking through his house, he's taking notes, but he looks like a bum. You know, she gives him that predator clothing. They can't see him. Every time they look at him, they don't see Odysseus, they see a bum. They see some kind of a beggar. So he's in there, he's eating. They invite him in, he's eating, he's paying attention to everything going on in his house. He's paying attention to all the filthy whores who have sold him out for property. In other words, they're conspiring. His servant girls, some of them had conspired with the evil suitors, the parasites. And then it comes to a head. The bum challenges, which is really Odysseus, he challenges the head of the suitors, the ones that wanted to marry his wife and get his property that have been parasiting off him. He challenges them to an archery match. If you know anything about Odysseus, he's quite an archer. And so he challenges them to an archery match, a fair match, and they'll shoot. And of course, they're reluctant at first because why would you challenge some homeless vagrant to archery match? Why would you honor him with this? But they step in the courtyard and they do it. And Odysseus, of course, he still looks like a bum. He surprised them. They didn't even think he could string a bow, but he strings one of these bows. You got to be a pretty strong guy to string a bow from scratch. He strings a bow, and then he raises the arrow. And the whole time it was a setup, the ultimate steely-eyed lone wolf setup. And he puts the arrow right at their necks, and he shoots the leader, kills him. And then everything comes out that it's Odysseus. He's there. He's armed to the teeth. He's got his son Telemachus, if I'm pronouncing correctly. I'm a little etchy on ancient Greek. But they all come out, and Pallas Athena, of course, is running around. Pallas Athena is sitting there running around, doing all kinds of things to make sure that the evil suitors don't get out alive, and he lays them low, hacks them to death. Why? Well, they were parasiting off him. They shouldn't have been in his house. They should have been in their own houses. They should have been eating their own cattle. They shouldn't have been minding their own business. You want to send his wife a love letter because you think he's dead and you want to marry her? There's a right and wrong approach to it, right? But Zeus pretty much let it happen. And choices and consequences. And then afterwards, even this is one of the best scenes in Western literature, God's daughter rounds up all the traitorous whores because Odysseus revealed himself to an old lady that had been a good servant. And he said, write down all the evil whores and what they've done to conspire with these suitors to steal my property. He slept with them and they're looking to steal my property. And she writes them all down and gives it to him. And then Pallas, God's daughter, rounds up all the whores, all the evil servant girls that were supposedly looking out for Odysseus, and hangs them from a tree in the front lawn. And God cracks three lightning bolts and he sends a few eagles, and justice had been done. That's pretty interesting stuff. So Zeus has his way about him. You never know what you're walking around with in this society, I guess. if that's what you want to believe. So there is some reason to believe that, he would probably have spies here. One can only imagine. Odin has some spies here. But he wouldn't much cotton for, you know, you're not going to go out of your way, do something, grant them land indefinitely, and then try to pull a stunt like that. It just doesn't make any sense. That's my point. Once you know who these characters are, nothing going on today really makes any sense other than they're not here. It's kind of common sense. If they are here, they're spies. Getting ready to pull back that bow at someone's head. Getting ready to pull an Odysseus or something. But that's my thinking on that. But typically, Enki is always creating problems to get reactions, to get solutions. And any time you're looking at that, waging war by deception, someone can come across as righteous. Someone can come across as having your best interests, when in fact he has his own agenda. Time and time again. There is no way you can look at Poseidon and say, I want that as a benefactor. He's a frigging wild card. For him not to be a wild card, he'd have to show up and kill Marduk. Ea would have to show up and kill Marduk and kill all these other guys and explain it to me. I don't trust him. I don't trust him. After reading just the Odyssey, just look at the titles. Match the titles up. Yeah, white mythology is always the same. It doesn't matter whether it's in the ancient Hindu epics or even if you come across into the Americas. It's all the same. One of them is pretty nice, and they ain't here. Whatever's here would not be so nice. That's kind of common sense. But, you know, for me to trust Enki, he'd have to show up here and kill his children. But here's another problem. And this is another great thing about Joseph Farrell's book. Joseph Farrell's book, Cosmic War, points us out to you. I wouldn't talk about him unless he pointed out stuff like this. I wouldn't consider him a legitimate. Because what he's pointing out is the direct opposite of anything most of you have read. What he's pointing out, and he's doing so in pretty much a, well, it's what you see is what you get once you know what you're looking at. You know, he's pointing out to you this on pages like 147. You know, you must use your power against your people. Well, that's pretty interesting stuff. Because we wouldn't be his people. I'm not talking about 65 million years ago. I'm talking about anything. We definitely wouldn't be his. He may be a benefactor of someone, but we're not considered his unless you're a cyclops or something. Unless you descend from that. Unless you descend from the wicked giants. Another thing he's pointing out to you, which is even more provocative, is something that most of you aren't aware of, but I have questions about it. Do I consider Marduk to be Ea? Do I consider this to be one and the same? When you get into the Sumerian text, there's a lot of fishy stuff. And it makes sense. Our enemy wages war by deception. They lie, cheat, and steal, and cover their tracks, and make it difficult to decipher what they're doing. They're not what you see as what you get. They're not Zeus, I'm going to crack a lightning bolt and kill most of the world. They're not like that. They wage war by deception. They would obviously need us for a whole lot. Like, you know, you don't have air conditioning until these white rabbits build it for you again. You need that gene pool if you ever plan on waging war against what left you here, because they might be coming back. You know, you're going to need us. So they'd be playing a lot of games. But one thing Farrell points out to you on page 150. Warrior Era. This is Marduk talking to Nurgle, who is also Era. This is a fascinating conversation. Concerning that deed which you have said you will do, and Era's talking about a revolt, Nurgel, Lucifer, whoever you want to call me, he's talking about another revolt, and I don't know when this was. This was ages ago. Who knows, but that's not relevant to this discussion. What's relevant to the discussion is what Marduk says, what he says. And this isn't accepted. This is Miss from Mesopotamia, from Dali. I call him Dali, D-A-L-L-E-Y. I call him Dali. This is an academic accepted translation. This is heavily vetted. What we do know is that this is the accepted translation. So even if this is a metaphor, he says a bombshell. Pharaoh is pointing out a bombshell. Warrior Era, concerning that deed which you said you will do, and this is Marduk talking to Nurgel, who is also Era. Considered Era. These guys have multiple different names. A long time ago, when I was angry and rose up from my dwelling and arranged for the flood. Marduk is saying right in the Sumerian epics about the first flood that he arranged for it. Remember, the power to arrange a flood is on that side of the pantheon. Yes. Long time ago, when I was angry and rose up from my dwelling and arranged for the flood, I rose up from my dwelling and the control of heaven and earth was undone. The very heavens I made tremble. The positions of the stars and the heavens changed. He's talking about the change in celestial time. Fascinating stuff. Marduk, one of these angels, and now a lot of listeners would know Marduk is pretty evil, but what you don't know is this guy's talking about arranging for the flood. How could he arrange for the flood? That's interesting stuff. So the reason remember, let's go back to the previous conversation, and Pharaoh's laying this out only a few pages apart. You must use your power, Enki, against your people. And now we have Marduk causing the flood, saying, I caused the flood. And what he's saying in this, he's bragging to Nurgle that I'm a big galactic badass. That's what he's saying. That's what the devil's saying, whatever you want to call him. And that's one of the reasons I like the book. He's pointing this out to you, and I'll point it out to you. In fact, I'll point it out to you a little more explicitly. Yeah, this side of the equation, there are many that believe Marduk is Ea. Many, many. And why? Well, that, and there's other things as well. I just know that whatever's here is evil. Whatever's here doesn't like me. I don't like them. Let's just leave it at that. And whatever's coming here would obviously have to explain everything to me because I don't get everything, but I know night from day. So saying, Enki, you should really be aware of that. There's some big holes in the thing that Ea is in fact Marduk. I don't know how that would work out, but you're dealing with a side that wages war by deception, a side that is positively evil and a lot of trouble. Obviously, the devil's in some trouble. And of course, Pharaoh goes ahead on 156, talking about the destruction, talking about when he arranged the flood, talking about the destruction of Tiamat, talking about this one conflict that happened gazillions of years ago. And Marduk says, and I'm going to quote this, this is from the Enuma Elish, this is from an academically accepted translation. Marduk says, he brought near to the net the gift of his father Anu. Well, Marduk's father is not Anu. Marduk's father is Enki. Enki's father is Anu. So there are those that say that Anu just means a god force. In other words, Anu is kind of like, it can mean their literal father, and it can also be a reference to God, the almighty power of the universe. That's interesting, but that's something you better damn well be aware of. This guy's admitting to causing the flood, because the second flood is caused by Nurgle. Nurgle talks to him and he doesn't talk him out of it. And they say, oh cool, let's have another flood. And that probably would have been the last natural disaster, whenever it was, 10, 15,000 years ago. But prior to that, he's talking about this ancient flood, which is in the minds of all the different rabbit racial families on Earth. That's all in their minds. We all know about floods. The flood legend goes near and far. But Enki's talking about, Marduk's talking about his father Anu. Well, if it's a gift from his father Anu, Marduk would have to be Ea, Enki. This doesn't really start making any sense, because what you're doing is you're reading Zachariah Sitchin. Zachariah Sitchin mixes facts with fiction. It kind of rhymes, doesn't he? And he's dead. He died on October 9th, I believe it was. And he's also a Jew rabbit. And right away, my alarm bells go off. But my alarm bells went off over a handful of other incidents with Sitchins, which I thought they were one of the weirdest incidents involving Sumerian texts. And I'll get to that in a minute. But you're asking me a direct question of why they believe this. They believe this for the same reason I know that side's evil, and I won't believe any otherwise until Ea himself comes out and kills his children, if that's what they are. But many believe that these are all one and the same. That they're just waging war by, they're just fooling around. That's something you need to be aware of. These texts, the way Pharaoh's laying them out, make it very simple to see. Once you understand who they are in the latest mythology, in the last chapter. The last chapter would have been Zeus running around here. Yeah, I mean, he's your average superhuman Aryan, and with all these other groups. With all these other ones, it can be good or bad depending on the day you catch them. A hell of a lot better than anything we got here now. Optimal, I don't know that he wants to watch us long term. That's a hell of a lot of work. Responsible for trying to wipe us out, well, it doesn't really make any sense. If he wanted to get rid of any of these other groups, they'd be gone. And when he gets back, they may be. Yeah, because this might be just one big test. Like the suitors. Odysseus walking around with the suitors and parasiting off him. One big test. He's testing them. He's seeing who's naughty, who's nice. But when he comes out, when he gets here or whatever, he can explain it to us. They don't call it the mysteries for no reason. I've always been asked, you know, if I'm some member of some secret society or something like that. Well, secret societies are the worst kept secret. But one thing they do keep secret is none of them know what the hell they're really about. Because there's always, you know, another level at the top, whether it be Mason or whatever, that knows more than the previous level. That's what it's all about. But no, I'm not a member of anything. I play a simple game. Seriously, I'm just white. I know how to read the stuff, or I know a little bit about it, and I know the direction truth goes, enough to make it provocative. But I don't see him as evil. Again, Zeus is what he is, and he'd be the first to tell you, no, I'm your father, I'm not God in the sense that you think I am, but I can kick your ass today, because I'm technologically superior. But of course, you know, how do we go to war nowadays? We go to war by sending in spies and getting all the information we need. And then we go with overwhelming force, kind of like the book of Revelation. Yeah, God shows up and it is overwhelming force. Everything that makes that choice makes a horrible choice. Right? Everything that follows the anti-rabbit makes a horrible choice. I'm not afraid of the truth, no matter where it goes. But saying, how do I come about that Inky is evil? Well, he's waging war by deception. He's creating problems to get reactions, to get solutions. Even in the Hurrian text, which Pharaoh points us out again. That's why I like Pharaoh. One book he points us out to any of the lay readers or anyone that's been reading about the Sumerian gods. In the Hurrian text, there's a setup where Enki comes running in. Someone wants war with the sky god. One of the most fascinating segments of any Western mythology. It would have been the Hittites. I guess it would have been the Hittite version. And of course they want war. This whoever shows up wants war. It's a surprise attack. It's an ambush set up by Ulikumi or one of these characters that's related to Enki through marriage. He's related matrilineally, through marriage. They've set up Zeus for something. And what they do is they shut down communications. They can't kill him, but they do. But the person they get involved doesn't have flesh like the other gods. Very strange stuff. Very strange stuff to be reading. But he lays all this out to you. He crosses a handful of mythologies, and in Cosmic War, he lays out that Kronos is Ea. I believe it's in this book. He lays out that in one of his books that Kronos is Ea. That's all legitimate. He's putting legitimate questions in your heads. That's why I like him. The truth doesn't scare me, but this is some strange stuff. I'll be the first to tell you that. If Zeus was real, if Odin's real, that's strange stuff. You know, but, you know, my thinking is when I see the final solution with no air pollution, when I see him shut down these big three religions and he's just had enough, and I see Jesus or someone like that come out, well, he would solve the big three religions really quickly. Sure he would. He'd know who he was. I don't know who he is, but he would know everything about him. He'd bring out that final solution with no air pollution or something along those lines, and I see Odin dancing around on an eight-legged horse flying through the air annihilating things. Well, okay. I don't even worry about it. Once you know where the truth goes, that ain't a bad day. Now, of course, there are those that the direct question is about the Diglaka. How does this go into the Diglaka? Because that the Nazis are trying to find out ultimate Aryan origins. They're trying to talk to the Aryan gods. They're doing exactly what they told us they were doing. Project Kronos would refer to the Kronos, it would refer to the First War. The First War of the God, the ancient conflict, which is between Ea and Enlil, or between Poseidon and Zeus. And of course, who is Poseidon's children? Well, Poseidon's children is Polyphemus, or they're big wicked giants. It's the Battle of the Titans and all that type of thing, all that stuff. What are they trying to call Ea, or are they trying to call Zeus? I don't know. I assume that some of them, both sides could have been on that equation. The Jews certainly weren't. No, the Jews certainly wouldn't have been in on that. But some of their leaders might come from wicked giants or something. Who knows? But you're in a wild card there. Because Project Kronos refers to what would actually be our enemy. You see, when you get on Nazis, there's all kinds of crazy stuff going there. Once you're going toward the truth, you're going to have all kinds of crazy stuff and cross currents and interested party or parties scared to death. You're going to have all kinds of things. As the truth starts coming out on this planet, whatever it may be, there's going to be more confusion than ever. So that's the part of getting near the truth. It just gets more confusing, right? But there's also, in the latest Percy Jackson, The Olympians, any cultural reference to Kronos is represented by Saturn. I'm always interested in. I'm always I gobble up anything on Saturn because I figure if someone knows the truth, it's probably going to come out first in pop culture on some weird abstract level. Maybe it's what you see is what you get. But one of the interesting things about Percy Jackson, the Lightning Thief, Western civilization is based on the Olympian gods. And Western civilization, someone is making a move on it, and that's Kronos. And Kronos is stirring in Tartarus, and he's trying to put his army of Titans back together. And basically, he's possessed, or he cuts deals with a god, or can possess him on some level. I haven't read the whole series. It's fascinating stuff. But Kronos is back at it. I find that fascinating. It's a fascinating concept, but it goes back to this original, even in the Egyptian, the Edfu texts. You're always dealing with an attack on Mars. That's what you're dealing with. From Saturn, whatever it means, even if it's just astrotheology, and always these little serpents involved. Serpents are something that show up in the Bible. They show up in the Garden of Eden, the serpent. But what's interesting about the serpent is if you know anything about Enkiria, he's shown as a serpent. So what does that mean, Horus? Is that a metaphor? Well, there are those that believe that Enki and Enil, that Zeus and Poseidon are not actually brothers. In North America, we have the indigenous red rabbits of North America. You know, they've been here for 10,000 years or something. And they would have a practice of creating blood brothers. They're not actual brothers. It's figuratively. It's kind of figurative. You know, it's my brother. He's not an actual brother. He's from another mother. But they believe that Enil is, in fact, another type of Ea Enki and Enil represent two fractions of two different alien species, one Aryan and one serpent. Crazy stuff. And they're having a competition here. They're playing for the next mutation, that type of thing. It gets real crazy. But he is always shown as a serpent. Yeah, Enki Ea is always shown as a serpent. Kind of interesting. Because Ptah, P-T-A-H, I believe it is the father of Egypt, and serpents end up quite a lot in one part of Egypt, in part of the Egyptian mythology. So I don't know what to say about that other than to tell you that. There are some that believe that he is a feathered serpent, and this is a concept, a dragon, a feathered serpent, basically another type of alien. You go from blonde hair, blue eyes to this reptilian thing, and I've been sent a lot of questions about this because I don't talk about it. I don't talk about it because nothing's known about it. The only part of the Sumerian text unknown are the parts about the serpents. You can't find anything about them, but someone has dug up some stuff about them, so I'm going to go into that next. But there are those that believe that these two pantheons aren't necessarily what you think, that one of them is white rabbitish, not here, and the other is something else, which is kind of provocative. And that's something else. And in fact, I'll tell you who a whole section of my listeners think the pink rabbit elitesters are. Forget about the Jew rabbits. Forget about the Neanderthal hybrids, but they believe there's another hybrid. And we'll go into that. We'll go into that because what Pharaoh points out is that Ea is the one that tempts Eve in the Garden of Eden with the apple. Ea infects the gene pool, and Nergal infects the gene pool if they're not one and the same. There are those that believe all the side, Enki, Ea, Nergal, Marduk are one and the same. A lot doesn't make sense when you assume Nergal is Marduk. But the Marduk, Enki connection is quite interesting because of the texts themselves and because we're dealing with an enemy that would lie incessantly. Before I go into serpents, before I go into this stuff, because there's too many unknowns, other than one provocative fact about Sitchin. And I'll go into that in a second. Before I do that, I'll answer one last question. I'm trying to cut this short. They don't call this stuff a mysteries for no reason. But when it comes to the naming of all the different moons of Mars, Phobos, Deimos, when it comes to naming the moons of Saturn, Titan, Iapetus, all these different names of all these different moons of all these different planets, one thing becomes rather provocative. The only one that's ever named them, and the only ones that's ever had those names stick, are white rabbits. Believe it or not, the Incans and whatnot, the different Indian tribes had names for the moon, but no one ever calls it their names. Some of the different tribes may have actually had names for the moons of Mars, Phobos and Deimos, but no one's ever called them. In modern astrology, all the names we use for the moons of these planets come from mostly from Greek mythology. Fascinating enough, that's provocative. But one last question. Horace, you say Ninurta's not so bad. I assume Ninurta could be Apollo, but Apollo may be a daddy, maybe from another pantheon. Once we go into Nazi Never Never Land, you never know. Ninurta, if he's here, he would be evil. But the reason a lot of people think he may be evil or whatnot is because they assume Ninurta's Nurgle. You see how confusing that gets. I have some issues with that, because Nurgle likes the little Africans, and Ninurta, pretty much, they meet his death rays, and they don't do so well, as he combs through the Absu. Ninurta is like a warlord. He comes across as a warlord. He certainly wouldn't want to blend us out of existence. He may want us as some extraterrestrial shock drop. In other words, send us to other worlds to conquer other worlds for him. I could see something like that, but he ain't going to blend us out of existence or anything like that, unless you assume he's Nurgle. But that's where it gets complicated, because if he's Nurgle, he's here, and he's operating in a vacuum. And if you're operating in a vacuum, you don't answer anybody. If he's not Nurgle, he's not here, he's not operating in a vacuum, and he answers to a whole lot of other people, and there's certain laws that you just don't violate. There's certain laws you don't violate. You know, going around setting up our stuff with all these goodies and whatnot, and then turning around and trying to kill us, that doesn't make any sense. It's totally illogical. So the only ones that consider Ninurta evil is the ones that consider him, Nurgle. I don't necessarily go down that road. I consider him sort of like a warlord. He's Thor. He's Thor. He's Phoebus Apollo. He doesn't scare me. He can be a wild card, okay. So can I on a given morning. You wake me up too early, I don't have my coffee, I can have a bad day. You're thinking these guys are, here to solve all your problems. They're not necessarily here to solve all your problems. They're here to help out, basically. You know, I don't see Zeus as doing anything other than make them show respect. Thor is like a big hero. But anyways, that's the road you go down. That's the mysteries. And of course, there are those that believe, in all fairness to Inky, is that he's not involved. Well, that would make sense, because his fingerprints are on Nazi Germany, are on some elements of Nazi Germany that become very confusing to me if he's not involved in this deal. If he's not involved in these deals, some things make sense. But we wouldn't know until he shows up. I'm just saying he's a wild card. He's a Loki, literally. And it wouldn't make, a lot doesn't make sense once you assume he's not involved. But in Nazi Germany, he does have some fingerprints on some things, but there's some wild cross currents in Nazi Germany. You're assuming that just because they oppose communism and the Jews that they're wonderful. Well, I assume that both sides can have some problems. One side is totally illegitimate. That's the Jewish elites, and their Anglo partners. And the other side is a big question mark. I'm only interested in what they found out, and I'm only interested in the truth and the whole truth. I don't like that stuff where the elite gets one version of the truth and all of us get another version. That's unsustainable. By the way, it's unsustainable on the timetable we're on. And now that I'm on it, I got past another question. The calendars I go into are million. Well, the calendar I talk about is, I talk about we're coming into the great central sun, and we spend 12,500 years or something like that going away from it, and 12,005 years coming back into it. And as we started coming into these celestial events, in the late 1600s, if you will, everything starts speeding up. Our race responded most aggressively for some unexplainable way. In 2012, there's a lot of unknowns. There's a tremendous amount of unknowns. And you're in the same calendar that our race is responding to on some level. I don't know. That's my interest in that. I'm not someone that advocates or believes in big disasters. Excuse me. I'm not someone that advocates or believe in big disasters in 2012. That's just our enemy or someone trying to use that to create a problem, get a reaction, get a solution. They're trying to run that some game. I'm only interested in this calendar as it relates to our race. And the question is, do I believe the calendar goes back? The calendar, and I've had several questions on this now that I think about it. The calendar goes back several gazillions of years, millions and millions of years. I can get my hands on a few thousand years, 12,500 years or 25,000 years. Once you go beyond that, I can't get my brain around that. But that's just my hang-ups. I can't understand something 3.5 million years ago or 65 million years ago or how something could even survive. I just can't understand that. But I don't really understand time either. Yeah, time would be just another factor that could be manipulated. Manipulated, yes. And so you go into a wild card, and it's a fascinating topic of conversation. And in the next one, we're going to go into little serpents. I'm going to ask all those questions about these little clay figurines that are 5,000 years from 5,000 BC. I'm going to talk about this. I'm going to talk about, since we're on the subject matter that's crazy, let's get crazy. You know, in our mythology, everything revolves around serpents. The generation of vipers in the New Testament. Zeus, who defeats the serpent, Typhon. Typhon is always shown as having the upper body of a man, wings, and the legs of a serpent. And that's what you get the title Feather Dragon. In Western mythology, we call them, not only feathered, we never call them feather dragons, we generally call them dragons, or in the Germanic and the Celtic tradition, they could be verms or worms. And I'm going to talk about this. I'm going to lay it out there, but there's a lot of unknowns for one particular reason. Those texts on these things, the actual legitimate text from Sumer, where they show up all of a sudden, and the little clay figurines is all missing. And what becomes more provocative is Mr. Sitchin's response. And Sitchin, of course, was speaking, he wasn't speaking for the best interest of my race. He's a little Jew rabbit. And he's deceased now, so I don't want to kick a dead man, but I'm going to give you some of his responses to this, because that's what's most provocative. He doesn't say, well, we don't know anything about the little serpents. We don't know anything about them because those texts are missing. That's what I'll tell you. That's a normal human reaction. You can show me texts on serpents, I'll talk about them all day long. Well, other than that, they're feathered serpents. These show up in South America. It's all a mystery. I'm going to talk about this a little bit. I'll be back with you here in a minute. And now a word from our sponsors. Horace, what can I buy to become the life of the party besides the Undercover Lover t-shirt? That is a question we always get asked. Well, you can always get yourself an Undercover Lover or a Green Goddess or a White Rabbit Radio beer stein. Yes, they've been reported to magically fill up on their own. Yeah, parties are just reported to overflow with beer. That's amazing. Amazing product, all for the very low cost of $23.99. Yes. And if you have problems getting up in the morning, you can always get yourself a White Rabbit Radio, Green Goddess, or Undercover Lover coffee mug. It'll help you wake up faster. Yeah, this stuff is reported to work very, very well. And those are all for the low price of $15. And all the proceeds go to support our servers. So if you're having problems becoming the life of the party, get yourself a beer stein. You're having problems getting up in the morning? Well, put yours truly in front of you. In front of you as you drink your morning coffee. And now back to our regular programming. Now this Q&A is going to start transitioning. We're going to start transitioning and we're going to talk about something crazy like serpents. In the previous piece, I answered as many questions as I could because there are so many unknowns about the Babylonian gods. I talk about who they are and who they aren't, or where the direction truth goes. It's not really relevant in most everyday conversations. It is relevant when you start talking about the Nazis. It wouldn't be relevant if they could die or go away. But since they can't die or go away, and since post-World War II someone's attempted to genocide Europeans, it becomes a fascinating conversation of what they do, and since we're getting blamed for it on some level, right, racially, well, we should at least know about it on some level. You know, I mean, the Jew rabbits went nuts after World War II, and someone agreed with them. Or certainly didn't fight them. Yeah, you know, Her Majesty the Queen of England's sitting there. She's been sitting there presiding over the greatest attempted genocide ever, European children. Never really heard a word from her. Saying, you know, maybe you Jews should lay off the propaganda. Maybe the Boer farmers should be allowed a place to land, a piece of land, and maybe we should get them off genocide watch. You know, and in South Africa there. I didn't really hear anything from them. And so it becomes rather fascinating, speculating on the pink rabbit elitesters. There's groups of rabbits out there with all the answers. And the answers go out there. Now, is it true? I have no idea. The problem that you face when you go into the next subject matter is that there's a portion of it that comes up. It comes up. It stares you down in the face. You're going to see it. But at the same time, it's a head-scratcher. What am I looking at? What is that? What was some white rabbit putting together in clay in 5000 BC? You know, it's kind of funny. on one end, you end up in Zachariah Sitchin's books. There were giants upon the earth, and he died on October 9th, and there's one of his latest books, There Were Giants Upon the Earth, Gods, Demigods, and Human Ancestry, The Evidence of Alien DNA. It's an interesting book. I haven't read the whole thing, but it's interesting. But Zachariah Sitchin is famous for exposing these little clay figurines, and some of them that he exposes look human, look just like us. Some of them are huge. You know, you got Zeus in there, you nil. And he's two, three times the size of us. He looks like a god, superhuman, huge, he's huge. Then there's something else. The funny thing about it is, the reason this comes to my attention is because there's something else he never includes. Yeah, I mentioned earlier that there was a little white rabbit on Stormfront named White Separatist. Very, very Stormfrontish. Screen name, White Separatist, and he pulled up a picture, and I'm going to link to it on my Twitter. And the picture that I talked about is a picture of something that shows up in Sumer. It's a little clay figurine. There are several of these that show up. I'm going to also link to some videos about that. I'm going to talk about this little clay figurine because we don't know anything about them. The fascinating thing about Zachariah Sitchin is he never puts them in any of his books. Another thing that alerted me or that caused me some, I thought was very strange, is that he never put them in any of his books, and when he was asked about them, he flipped out. He told the person they better watch it. You know, who are you to question me on these? Who are you to ask me any questions about the serpents? You know, that's what they're asking about, serpents. You've heard this term feather dragon. We've heard dragon. We've heard serpent, the red dragon revelation. We know that E.R. Inky's always presented as a serpent on some level. That means something. I don't know. If you know anything about Western tradition, whether it be the generation of vipers in the New Testament, or you know about Zeus battling Typhon, or you know about Zeus battling the giants always have legs like a serpent. You know anything about Loki, one of his children is, you know, the Midgard serpent or whatever. You have this whole entire, this stuff we can't get away from, the symbolism. But there's a whole group of rabbits that believe it's the real deal. They believe in Aryan extraterrestrials, serpent extraterrestrials, and you got the David Icke stuff. I've talked about it before. But the funny thing is, when it comes to Zachariah Sitchin, is that always threw me off, and there's more than one party that have asked him about this, and he freaks out. Now, normally, if someone asks me about that, I'll say, well, this is a clay figurine. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a spacesuit. I don't know if it's some white rabbit back there putting it together that's high on mushrooms. I don't know if it's not just some Babylonian version of sci-fi. I don't know that they're not all smoking pot or something, just hallucinating on acid, on Sumerian hybrid version of acid, and they're all high as a kite doing these. I have no idea, because no one's ever read the text on them. There are text on them. Just no one's ever read them. I find that all kind of strange. And the one person asked about it, who happens to be Jewish, which is kind of funny, he freaks out over it. That is normal behavior. Normal behavior is like, I don't know. I don't know what it is. You find the text, show me. I mean, I can show it to you. So someone on Stormfront pulls up one of these little characters, like, and he freaks out, which is normally what you do. You're like, wait a minute, what am I missing here? What is this? What is this serpent stuff? I mean, David Icke talks about stuff, and it sounds kind of out there. It sounds kind of funny. And it is highly speculative, because no one's read the text. But this isn't speculative. This actually is something that what they put together. Now, whether what it is, what it means, I don't know. I mean, I know what it is, if it's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be like a feathered serpent, or this concept of reptilian alien type thing. I just don't know enough about it. I do not know. Whatever it is, I'm sure it doesn't like us. And I have no idea. But what that whole branch believes is basically what you have is a version is interesting. There's an interesting example of it. An interesting example of it in a movie called Avatar that I've seen the whole thing. And I don't particularly care for many elements of the movie. I don't like the social engineering in it and all this other kind of BS going on. And I'll talk about that in the... there's a podcast that's going to be out the same time called White Rabbit Psychology. And I'm going to talk about this because it's a great example of our enemy's propaganda. And it's very old, it's very overdone, but there's two concepts in here that are fascinating. One concept is the separation of body and mind. It's separation of body and mind, interchangeable with soul. You know, a mind is a soul. It would also be your consciousness. There's a separation of consciousness and body. They can actually put a human consciousness into an avatar, and an avatar is a bio-engineered organism that looks just like the Na'vi. The Na'vi are an alien tribe, And they have a bioengineered organism that looks just like the Navi. And it has a certain amount of human DNA. But because it has a certain amount of human DNA, it can hold a human consciousness, a human soul, a human mind. So a human can be in a Navi, but not be a Navi. It's trippy stuff. Because we've talked about this as a concept. What science is saying right now, what the German scientists are saying, is that, the Semites of the Middle East are about 20% Neanderthal. Well, that's heavy duty. That's a heavy duty hybrid. What type of consciousness are they holding? Well, they seem to be a little violent. If you've ever seen Paris burning on a summer day with all the crazy Muslims out of the Middle East, well, they seem a little bit more violent than normal. Have you ever seen the Jews can't understand why they're constantly fighting them to the death? Well, they might not be able to help it. Maybe two birds of a feather. Two birds of a feather going at it. I mean, one can only imagine a hybrid like that. Such a thing. If you were to tell me 10 years ago such a thing like that could exist from a racial perspective, I'd say no way. They're too unstable. But we don't know. There's some unknowns here. But anyways, in the movie Avatar, they create avatars. And they're using it to try to teach this tribe and to try to get them off this raw material called, I can't even think of what it's called now. It escapes my mind, but you'd have to see the movie, and I'll talk about the movie again. But anyways, just the two concepts are down, and they're separating consciousness from body, and you can put a human consciousness into another, a hybrid. And this hybrid, of course, could, by and large, it isn't Navi. It isn't that alien. It looks just like them, but it has an extra finger. It has an extra finger. There's one difference. It has human DNA, enough human DNA to hold human consciousness, to hold a human soul. Very, very interesting concept. They're separating our existence between our physical existence and our consciousness, or our mind, or souls, or whatever. No different than the Bible, really, but, you got body, you got your soul that's separate than your body, you got your consciousness, whatever you want to call it, separate than your body, but it's fascinating stuff. And what a whole group believes, and it's a pretty large group. It's a pretty large group. The largest group of rabbits out there in the alternative news and research believe this type of thing. It's a huge number. I mean, if you look at the, I'm going to have some videos linked, and one of them's quite a lot better, even if it has some funny parts. It has some interesting stuff in it. The other one is just plain silly about George Bush being an alien, but the thing has 2 million hits. If you put up a video on YouTube and you're getting 2 million views, that's pretty, and you're out of nowhere. You're just putting some up on YouTube and you're getting 2 million hits. It's pretty, it's heavy duty. Most famous Europeans, most famous movie stars, I'd be lucky to get that. But to have something off the wall and get that is pretty, pretty interesting. But this stuff is heavily looked at, and what they believed is basically you have an avatar. And what they think the pink rabbits are, the ones that listen to this podcast, they believe the pink rabbits are an avatar. They're a hybrid. They look just like us, but it ain't us. It is a, it's an avatar. It's waging war by deception. You can only imagine. Can you imagine going into an alien world and then you recreate that bio-design, that alien body, and put a human soul in it? So you got the human and the alien running around, controlling it, waging war by deception. Well, that's a pretty wild concept. Watch the movie. But they believe something like that's here. They believe there's a hybrid. Now, is there anyone in the Sumerian text that created a hybrid? Yes. They're called Nephilim in this case. It was Nergal or Ea, Marduk, and people believe they're all one and the same. They're on the same side. They're evil, whatever they are. If they're here, they're evil, but that's what it says they created, a hybrid on some level. Now, do we know who they are? I have no idea. There are several different flaws, and there's all kinds of weird stuff going on at the top of Western civilization to no end. And so it lends itself to this type of conspiracy talk, but they didn't get it out of nowhere. They got it out of the Sumerian text of the hybrids. And I'm not talking about, God creating man. I'm talking about this. I'm talking about God made man in his image and his likeness. We're not talking about that episode. We're talking about something else. But that's where it comes from. And when it comes to these things, these critters, I don't know what the hell they are. The feathered serpents, the dragons, they're big in our mythology. They go all over the place, even the New Testament, the generation of vipers. And that's what basically they believe. They believe, I'm kind of agnostic on this, I don't know what to believe anymore. But that's what they believe, and if there's a link, you can see a picture of it, you can watch a couple videos, one of them's really goofy, I don't see anything about George Bush and his eyes turning into alien eyes, but there's all kinds of stuff like this, reptilian eyes, there's all kinds of stuff on this internet, and then the other one's pretty interesting, it crosses our history with Aztec history, and these guys show up on the scene, they just show up on the scene. On some level, I don't know whether it's metaphorically, I don't know whether it's someone high designing these things back in Sumer, I don't know whether we have the whether we have beyond the flesh and you're dealing with you're dealing with something aryans and serpents going at it, there's so many different angles on this thing, no one knows what those little Nazis found out, but someone did exactly what you'd want to do on this planet to find out. And it all goes back to Nazis. Yes, it does. It all goes back to Nazis. And so it's kind of entertaining when you get into the original battle and speculation on the original battle and who Kronos is. Because we know it's Eon and what this means. Who's the Red Dragon of Revelations? And it's all related. It's all related and it's all highly speculative. But yet fascinating at the same time. And in the next piece, I'm going to go into that. I'm going to go into some different ideals on that because you think the topic gets a lot of questions, and I answer all questions. I waited for someone to find this little thing and to dig it out and say, Horace, you told us, that the typical question that I am asked is, you said the Anakai are blonde-haired blue eyes, or the Anunnaki, whatever you want to call them. Well, I never really said that. As I said earlier, I'll say it again. I never said that. It means those that came down. That doesn't mean the same thing. There are some big questions here once you walk into this, and I don't have the answers. I have more questions than answers, but I will entertain it. It shows up in our mythology time and time again. And since we have this little group of white rabbits who started bringing mythology to life, that's the Nazis. Yeah, the Nazis believed myths were true on some level, that they could be read a certain way and that some of these characters were actually real. They believed Odin was real. They didn't believe he was a myth. And that there was this perfect Aryan order that the... What's funny about the average little some of the Nazis beliefs, it comes right out of early church history about that there was this perfect order in the solar system, and this order in the solar system, and it was a totally different astrological chart at the time, totally different zodiac, if you will. And this Aryan zodiac got messed up, and it became into this zodiac. If you look at the modern zodiac, there's all kinds of chimeras in it, part animal, part human. And so there was a fall. There was a fall of a perfect Aryan order, and they believe this type of thing. And they believe that these guys were out there. And this stuff goes back. You start talking about the history on it. It goes back a long, long ways. The little figurines you're looking at are supposedly 5,000 BC Babylon, Sumer. But anyways, in the next piece, I go into that as best I can because you're really going out there. The problem with the David Ickes and whatnot. Is not that they might not be true on some level. The problem is that there's no text available on it. And if you ask anyone about it from that side of the equation, whether it be the little Jew rabbits running their game, or, well, anyone else you wouldn't even know about. They're the obvious ones, and they will outright, they go nuts. I don't know. Usually, if someone's saying you're part serpent or something like that, you're usually not going to entertain them. They usually want a wacky, If someone said, Horace, you got serpent ancestors, I would say, yeah, sure. I'm not going to take them all that seriously. I'm surely not going to get upset about it, which is odd. They're a group that can't handle criticism. They can't differentiate between criticism and attack. They can't differentiate between someone just being critical of their work and attacking them outright. They assume everything. Is an attack on them, so it's kind of odd. It's almost a genetic trait. But I don't know. I don't know where the stuff goes, other than in a very strange area. But in the next case, I'm going to go into that. We're going to go into that, and we will start that process in a few minutes. And after that, I'm going to answer some more questions on Roswell. What I think about Roswell and the Reich, and what I think, and I was asked another question, what's the craziest story I ever heard, and I will go into it. And this one's going to go long, so if you want to stop it and listen to the rest later, go ahead, because I'm not going to put it on two podcasts. That would make another two crazy podcasts instead of one long one. You can just stop it and start it again, or hit fast forward on your iPod or BlackBerry and find this part again. But anyhow, here we go, reptilians. So to sum up where we're at, real quick, before we move into another subsection, I guess you could say, whatever's here would die, whatever's coming here would kill it, and then tell us what on earth is going on. Obviously, we'd be ill-equipped to deal with something extraterrestrial. We can barely deal with what's here. Barely deal with ourselves. One of the challenges is when you first walk into something like this, a lot of the, especially the white racial varieties, the other kind are well prepared for it because they've been in there for years. They've been looking at this stuff. But the white racialists, they look at this type of thing and then they start digging into it and they realize what's out there, what is there, and that they'd never seen it before. And then they start reading all these different authors, many of these different authors, Zachariah Sitchin's, who writes part true, part fiction. Their sources become questionable. The ickies, the different parties out there that write about this type of thing, they all come from different perspectives. None of them come from any racial perspective. They get upset about that. They get upset about just the fact that some of this stuff was out there and they missed it all their life. Well, there's nothing to get upset over. It's not easy to read it. There's a lot of missing pieces. But someone was looking to put the pieces together long, long ago. There's also something else that comes up. You see, when you get into Babylon or Sumer, these little figurines are still around. These little figurines, and I'm going to put up a website of these figurines. And this came up on Stormfront. And Stormfront, someone asked these questions. His name's White Separatist. He puts up a picture of... there are three types of figurines seen in Sumer and Babylon. And you get the ones that look like us, these little clay figurines, little white rabbit figurines. Then you get something about twice the size of us. And we've talked about them already. Then you get something else. And this something else is what he put up. And he said, you didn't tell us about this. What is this? And then he goes on some long rant about how none of these guys are racially minded that you're talking about, like Joseph Farrell. None of them will be. Yeah, your race is not racial, and that is racial. You're going to have to learn to deal with that long term. Even if you were to control the educational system, you cannot make them hyper-ethnocentric. Why? Because race is real. You're not going to be able to do that. So you're going to have to learn to get around that. And then they go on these big rants, and I just had a quick look at this book. It's pretty crazy. I searched for all the terms in each chapter, such as Aryan, blue eyes, blonde hair. He's talking about The Biggest Secret. This is a book by... This is a book by Icky. This is a book by Icky, the Brit, and David Icky, or David Icke, whatever you want to call him. And he said he seems pretty anti-Aryan from what I can assert. And follow the White Rabbit 42, you assert that Anokai or Anunnaki were basic giant versions of us, but this David Icky guy claims that the Anokai were reptilians and Aryans essentially half reptilian, yada, 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 yada. What is true? What is this? What do these texts actually say? Well, several of them are missing. David Icky's never read them all. David Icky doesn't have any sources. And first off, let me go back. I never said the Anunnaki or the Anokai, whatever you want to call them. I never said anything about them being blonde hair and blue eyes. I said it means those that came down. That's not the same thing. And second, I never talked about these pictures because no one ever put them up. But now that you put them up, I will talk about them. So you have three things basically in Babylon, which is a big, big question mark. Anyone that's listened to this podcast knows that this is a big question mark. Something happened there. The only thing there that would lead me to scratch a head over, scratch your white rabbit ears over, is a picture of this thing. And where's this reptilian stuff coming from? Well, this is where it's coming from. In our history, there's something that happens over and over again in mythology. You have the universal intention of symbols. We have the same stuff happening over and over again in our mythology. And the most recent mythology would, of course, be Greeks. We'll stay with the Greeks. And in Greek, Zeus defeats Typhon. Typhon is often shown as having a body of a man, the legs of a reptile, and wings. He's a feathered serpent. You've heard this word, feathered serpent. That comes out of South America. It's pretty blatant talking about the feathered serpents. In our history, in European history, we have the terms dragons. The Germanic tradition talks about the worms. The Celts also talk about the worms. The red dragon in Revelation. What else can I talk about? This whole idea of a serpent, reptilian. Dragons, they're pretty much interchangeable. Feather, serpent, dragon, interchangeable. Worm, interchangeable. So what is this? Well, from what I guess, from what I've always heard, it's a feathered serpent. It's one of them. What are they? I don't know. I've never seen one. They show up a lot in our history. If you know anything about the the alternative news and research crowd, you start dealing with the largest videos, the most successful videos on YouTube. It's actually quite shocking that most of them are NWO reptilian truth, and some of them are pretty provocative. Some of them are pretty well put together. I'll put one up to show you guys, and you can go off and watch some of them. It has about 800,000 hits, which is pretty shocking. It's very well done. It's only 4 minutes long. One of the reasons I like about this one, and in researching this topic, you will be surprised what's out there. But I'll get back to it in the middle. In this particular one, you're going to get elements of European history, pictures, statues out of London, actual statues out of London. You're going to get various different things, some pop culture, some stuff out of South America, which I like when they combine stuff from South America. If you combine, the logo for Alfa Romeo with something happening in South America off the Aztec paintings, well, it's pretty interesting. But you'd have to watch it, and you can get a good idea of where they're coming from on this stuff and why this stuff gets such outrageous hits. You know, there's a serious problem in Western civilization. You have the people at the top who are basically trying to kill their populations who are, well, there's just something wrong with the equation. It doesn't matter whether you come from a racial perspective or from a Japanese perspective or from your regular truth seeker who has no idea of race at all. And there's lots of white rabbits out there. There's something seriously wrong at the top. And that leads to a lot of, when something unnatural is happening, that leads to a lot of unnatural answers. And you can go on, Reptilian Bush, the video that woke the world up. It's a pretty provocative video, the way they have it arranged. It's about 3 minutes long, and it's got over 2 million hits. 2 million viewers. It's a lot. And you can see it all related to this NWO Reptilian Truth. But the NWO Reptilian Truth one I like simply because it combines pop culture. It combines symbols, both ancient, both modern. It combines stuff from South America. And you can watch it. It's some of it's pure entertainment. Some of it's BS. It's kind of funny. Some of the superimposed pictures of Bush. You just have to watch it. But there's always been this type of talk coming from certain researchers, and this is one topic that comes up over and over again. If you start talking about Zeus, or even Thor, who takes on the Midgard serpent, or however it's pronounced, the correct way to pronounce it, this happens. Saint George, who defeats the dragon. These are all interchangeable concepts on one way, shape, manner, form. But there is something that shows up in Babylon. One of the things that got my attention from it, I just assumed that it was white rabbits back then drawing something goofy. Zachariah Sitchin, who is a Jew rabbit, who talks about the Sumerian text. He talks about them part real, part he's making stuff up. He never covers these guys. If you read Zachariah Sitchin's latest book about something like there's giants on the earth, he'll have the little clay figurines of us, he'll have the little clay figurines of the giants, but he won't have these. One of the things that drew my attention, and you can go to my Twitter, you can go up, you'll hit the Stormfront link, don't be afraid of them, and you'll see one of these clay figurines. The NWO Reptilian Truth video I put up has several of these figurines right from Sumer, right from Babylon. They're about 5,000 years old, or some say older. But when Zachariah Sitchin was asked about these, I know a few different parties that asked him directly about these. He has these question and answer things in New York. Someone can show up and ask him a question. One of them, he blew a fuse. He generally doesn't want to talk about this. I thought that was the strangest thing in the world. Now, this guy's sold quite a few books on Sumer, quite a few books on his interpretation of the Babylonian text. And all of a sudden, he starts writing about the Anukai. There are three different figurines there. He shows the two different figurines, the one that looks like us, but he doesn't show the ones that are the serpents, the feathered serpents, whatever the hell you want to call them, the dragons. He doesn't show any of that. Whatever they are. When you go into the Indian text, there's over 400,000 alien species. I don't know. I don't know where we'd fit in once you go down this road. It's a pretty crazy road. I try to keep things simple, but it's a curveball. You know, you got Zachariah Sitchin who refuses to answer questions about him. Well, what about those serpents in those texts? What about this little thing? And he refused to answer. And that's when I started scratching my head, because Zachariah Sitchin is supported by guys at the top of Anglosphere. And Anglosphere, I have big problems with some of the people at the top. I don't care whether it's Jew, Gentile. I want to know what's up. And I always have big questions about Babylon, and this is one of my biggest questions. What is that? What is that? Are there references to these things in pop culture? Sure, in a variety of different ways. One of them made a movie. One of them made a reproduction of Beowulf that is quite good. It is very, very good. I'll go into that in a second, but you can watch this Riptalian Truth, the Truth of the NWO. I will tell you something about the Sumer texts that deal with these feathered serpents or deal with these things. Good luck in finding one. Good luck. You can see this picture, but you're never going to find the text associated with them. What are they? I don't know. Are they here? Well, it could be. Is some hybrid something bred with them? One of the Anukai who got himself in trouble, maybe one of the rejects of the Parthenon, bred with these and created Nephilim. There's all kinds of different theories. We're in the dark on this stuff, intentionally kept in the dark. And the person that's talked about them the most, in, at least in the English language, refuses to talk about them, which is kind of odd. And he's Jewish, which is kind of odd. Yeah, very odd stuff. Things that make you go, what the hell? But it isn't that I neglected it. It's just, and I will talk a little bit about you know, it comes up in our mythology time and time again. But when you're bringing myths to life, you don't know what else is going to pop in there. And this is one of the things: the reptilians, the references from the Edfu text on reptilians and attack on Mars. And it's always reptilian, yeah. Always attack on Mars. There are theories, since we went into all some alternative theories on the Babylonian gods or the Greek gods, that these characters are not all the same species, that Enki or Ea, because he's always presented as a serpent. He's a serpent in the one that tempts Eve in the garden. That is Ea. That is Enki. He's always presented as a serpent. And we know that Kronos in the Greek tradition is not only, is actually Ea, Enki. He's also Poseidon after he loses. There's all kinds of crazy stuff going on here. Obviously, that's why they call it the mysteries. It's one big mystery. But in taking it apart and piecing it together, it's one constant theme. Serpent. And they're constantly associated, they're associated with Egypt at one time, definitely. You know anything about the headdress of Egypt? And this is a constant, a huge, huge branch of the alternative news and research is dealing with these serpents. You know, and many of the more respectable ones that have read the text believe that there's some type of deal between these things and the losing side of the pantheon. You got one side of the pantheon stuck here, and they cut a deal with these things. Something along those lines. I don't know. I have no idea. What's interesting is one ended up in a movie, or what most believe to be one. And that movie is Beowulf. It's one of the modern renditions of Beowulf, and it's a good movie. The 2007 version of Beowulf, and Beowulf's been remade many times. This was a Robert Zemeckis film, and it was remade, and you have Beowulf, and it grossed about $150 million. I actually had the DVD, because the word is a feather serpent was on it. I'm like, okay, let's see what they present a dragon as or a feather serpent. And it was pretty interesting, and you know, Beowulf's a story, and there's a handful of different renditions of the story. It's about Grendel's mother. And Grendel's mother comes out of the water, and she shapeshifts into Angelina Jolie. And then has a baby with Beowulf, and this baby's a giant golden child who turns into a dragon. You'd have to really watch the thing. Just watch it. But whatever comes out of the water and turns into Angelina Jolie is the same thing you're looking at in the clay figurine, or so most believe. They don't really show it's not a full picture of it, but you'll see what we're talking about. You'll see, you'll definitely see this, type of crazy shape-shifting type thing. Yeah, shape-shifting serpents is what they, is what they're showing. And of course she has this thing, I don't know what they're called, but this thing, turns shape-shifts into Angelina Jolie and then gives birth to this giant golden child who then attacks the town and Beowulf kills him. And kills his, basically half son. And he can shapeshift into a dragon. It's crazy stuff, but it's a good rendition of Beowulf. You'll like it. And you'll see one of these things. Supposedly, when Angelina Jolie comes out of the water playing Grendel's mother, whatever Grendel's mother was, that's what it is. It's the same thing as these little clay things. I don't know. I have no idea. One of the craziest things in the, when you start looking at, because I'm a skeptic by and large, when you start looking at the UFO stuff, extraterrestrials, there are three main varieties, really. There's the little gray ones. You've seen all about those. There's the white rabbit ones. The white rabbit ones are most interesting because they look just like us, and I always assume they are us. The little gray aliens, I assume someone made them up. That's my kind of bias. I could be very wrong on that. Probably am, because my biases on such things usually get me in trouble. And there's a third one. Third one is some type of reptilian. There's a handful of different varieties, different reports. And some of the reports are pretty provocative in so much that you come away, once you look at the testimony, once you try to look at it objectively, that I don't know if it's real or not, but someone's definitely seeing something, because they're seeing a whole lot of these. When it comes to gray aliens or reptilians, they're seeing a whole lot of something. Someone's seeing something. It's like the white rabbits. I assume it was the Nordic aliens. It's just some white rabbit country who has themselves some advanced technology landing, pulling the wool over someone. That's my assumption. That assumption is very flawed, because things like this have arrived on this planet before. You should probably know about that. It doesn't mean they will again or anything, but you when you go down this avenue, there's a whole ton of pitfalls. But you come away believing that when it comes to a certain type of aliens that, I've never seen any. I don't personally know what's out there until it shows up and lets me see it or lets me talk to it. That's my bias. But someone else is seeing a whole lot of stuff. Or at least they're convinced they see it. You know, I don't know if all these people are nuts or what. But there's a whole lot out there on the reptilian. And the reptilian hybrids, and it goes back to Babylon, and it goes back to this picture. And I can't, you can sit here and extrapolate all day long. One can only imagine. There are those that believe that Ea is a different species, that in the pantheon, there are two general species, one Aryan and one serpent, which is kind of interesting. And it's kind of like, instead of Ea being Enlil's brother in a literal sense, instead of Poseidon being Zeus's brother in a literal sense, that he is, it's a figurative sense. Kind of like if you were in North America, we have these indigenous red rabbits in North America, and they have blood brothers. Blood brothers aren't real brothers. They're brothers, but they're not real brothers. And you're talking about, in that sense, it's a figurative sense, and they're competing over something, and the competition involves us. There's all kinds of provocative theories about this, and some of them can support themselves with texts. You know, you get some of these guys that are smart enough to be dangerous, and they go out and they cut stuff in, and they cut, and you can, based on what is out there in European history, or what is out there in clay figurines, or what is out there in the ancient Vedics, Vedic tradition, the Hindu tradition that goes way back, South America. You've got all kinds of cannibalistic, reptilian, alien-like things in South America. You've got all kinds of crazy stuff out there. That there is no rational explanation for. And really, it leaves one almost clueless. Other than I can show you the pictures and tell you that's what they said showed up there. What it means, I don't know. Something like that's here. Obviously, you need a whole lot of help. The good news is a whole lot of help would be coming. Here's the good news. The glass is always half full for me. So if the Jew God is some reptile, good, cool, fantastic. There's a rational explanation. If that's what's behind this, and it's just the alternative news and research crowd, they believe that the Jews are just a front behind Jews, and behind AIPAC is they're just a front for religion in general is a front for extraterrestrial species competing for the world, and it's provocative. because, you know, God and the angels don't come from Chicago. They'd be extraterrestrial, too, on some level. And these are all provocative theories. The ones that are more provocative are the ones that support themselves with text. And the only thing I can tell you about reptilian aliens is that that is out there. It's all over mythology. It's all over, it's the little clay figurines show up right with us, right with the other gods in Babylon at one time. You can go to Stormfront and see it. You can see it on the NWO Reptilian Truth video. You'll see the different references from South America. It's provocative stuff. I just don't know what else to do with it. I wouldn't know what else. It's definitely in the Edfu text. One thing that becomes clear in Egypt is that Mars was, it always involves Mars. It always involves attack from serpents, and we're not on Mars, obviously. Very odd stuff. Very odd stuff. And it is well-watched, well-looked at, and gets a whole lot of attention. Again, the only thing that ever piqued my curiosity is when the so-called expert on the that was writing all about the Babylonian text, Zachariah Sitchin, was asked about these. He flipped out. I thought that was a very odd reaction. And he's flipped out more than once on more than one occasion to someone who asked about serpents. And what are these? You know, basically a picture. Like, okay, you got the little figurines there. That's obviously maybe something European or something human. That's something big. It's twice the size of a human, but it still looks human. What is that? You know, what are these reptilian things? What are this? What is this? Tell us about these texts. If you flip out over that, well, I'm going to say, whoa, what are you hiding? What are you hiding there, bud? You know, is there something we need to know about you? When it comes to YouTube, you'll notice if you go to the, I'll put this on my Twitter, NW Reptilian Truth. It's a well-done video. Some of it's funny, some of it's comedy, and some of it is just plain statues in Europe and all kinds of historical stuff, usually involving Europeans or something at the top of the European society, namely royalty. It would definitely involve the Anglo elites. And if you pull down the Reptilian Bush, the video that woke the world up, you will see outrageous number of viewers on this stuff. The text on these things, whatever was said about them, is not known. And that should, of course, that brings up alarms in all of us. But the references that are to our mythology, to serpents, are unending, to dragons, unending. We don't generally use feather serpents. The ancient Celtic Germanic tradition uses worms or verms. You know, and I'm guessing any type of extraterrestrial would have good and bad. So you're going to have good and bad in anything, but obviously whatever's here would be evil. And whatever cut a deal with them would even be more evil. And whatever coming here would kill them and explain it to us. So I keep it pretty simple. But you can watch Beowulf. Beowulf has one of these things coming out, but there's not a lot known. There is no one that can point to any text from Sumer that's been released on the feathered serpents. There is an event I will talk about because I was asked directly about it, and I will talk about it. I do know about it, or I know a little bit, and it's pretty wild. And that's a story in 2006. You know, it's long about April in 2006. Excuse me. April 2006, early 2006, America had been in Babylon. The United States invaded Iraq. And there was all kinds of strange stuff reported there. The Russians shocked a few people by releasing pictures. And I wish I would have saved it. Had I known I was going to do a podcast on this stuff, I would have saved this picture. Because this picture would have all my listeners scratching their heads. I can no longer find the picture, and I didn't save it. And I can't find it anywhere online, but you can. You can look it up. You know, you can look up. There was reports. I'll go through the whole story. Russian intelligence had released pictures and a report that the United States military had of course been in Iraq, and you had the looting of the Baghdad Museum. You have all these artifacts that went missing before and after because of the Russians. Well, the Russians weren't known to be there, but the Germans were there, and some of the French were there. The Germans were there big time with Saddam, digging up stuff. And so you have the Americans arrive there, and then you have Russia in 2006 release these photos sometime in the early part of 2006. And the photos show a giant circle. A giant circle, half mile, some would say a mile in diameter. It was a giant circle. I know I saw it. It's a giant circle, and there's a C-130 parked inside the circle, I believe, and they're doing something. if something looks out of the ordinary. I know a little bit about military procedures and stuff like that. It was no normal military procedure. And I don't know, you know, the Russians just leaked this stuff. They just threw out these pictures. And the alternative news and research crowd just went wild. The NWO reptilian truthers went wild. And if you look it up, mysterious ritual performed by U.S. military forces in Babylon. You can look that up. Just Google that, and you'll find different articles about it. That's what it looked like. It looked like some big ritual going on. It's very strange stuff. Very strange stuff. As a U.S. citizen, it's the strangest thing I've ever seen. If I wouldn't have seen the pictures, I wouldn't have believed it. And of course, it was a, the Russian satellite photos taken of the area around Babylon, around one of the ancient sites in Babylon, stated the Americans, and that the photos it looked like, that we had constructed a nearly 1 kilometer circle. That's what they called it. They called it kilometer because our metric system, around their massive excavation of one part of Babylon, and that they were pulling up a feathered serpent. or the tomb of one. Most likely a tomb, most likely some type of artifact or something, but it was certainly ritualistic. It was very odd. And an apparent ritual related to ancient objects. They talked about this, that they're bringing up ancient objects, and that they the Russians leaked that it was excavation of a feathered serpent, objects toward a feathered serpent. That little thing you see there, that little thing you see on Stormfront, that one of the little Stormfronters dug up, you will see similar things in the NWO Reptilian Truth right out of Babylon, the little clay figurines. And that's, you're back into Babylon, and you're back into feathered serpents. I don't know what to make of it, but it's a very, one of the strangest things I've ever seen. If it wasn't for the actual picture, I wouldn't believe it, but they were doing something. And they had a massive, one of the big C-130s, one of the military cargo aircraft, which they were supposedly to bring it to the United States. Now, I don't know whether it was artifacts. They say it was a tomb. The Russians said it was a tomb of a feathered serpent. This is the Russian. They're kicking this stuff out. It's a tomb of a feathered serpent. I'm like, oh, my. What does that mean? You're dealing with the Anglo elite, and we're like, oh, my. We got big questions about some people, you know, shapeshifters, or whatever's going on, whatever they were after there. But you can look it up. It is one of the strangest events in modern America. Some of this stuff does not get talked about, and this is, of course, the Russians leaking this again. God only knows. Heavens only knows where this stuff goes, but it goes in some strange areas. Very strange areas, and it always goes somewhere out there. Look up. Always goes somewhere out there. But that is the strangest thing I could tell you about the feathered serpent, as they came up on the scenes in 2006. Feathered serpent, dragon, serpent, worm. It's all really interchangeable. They're all the same thing. They don't like us, I don't think. I don't think they like white rabbits, or they like to eat us or something. I don't know. It came up in Beowulf film in 2007. That's what Grendel is, where she shapeshifts into Angelina Jolie. Real nice, I guess. Real nice to have one of those things around, preying on white rabbits. But and there's usually talks of ritual sacrifice. In the NWO Reptilian Truth, in this video, one thing they do very well is they show the different the different things that looked like that looks like sacrifice, look like various different types of sacrifice. And not to get too far out there, but many have stated that Enlil, or they think Enlil or Zeus, is a serpent. Let me explain this to you. That's not. One of the things I understand quite well is that my enemy really likes the Old Testament. Jew, Gentile, like whoever at the top of Anglosphere. Anglosphere, of course, invented pretty much Protestantism, by and large. They really support, especially the modern evangelicals, and they love the Old Testament. And the Old Testament, there's a clear distinction between that, whoever's running around there, and Zeus, and in one particular way. If you read about Zeus, there's a famous story about him and a Greek king. And Zeus walks around disguised, and the Greek king sacrifices a child and offers it to him to eat. And it's the story of Lycon, and that's where you get the word lichen. And lichen, of course, means werewolf. And he turns the king into a wolf, and he kills all his children for trying to for offering him a sacrificed child. Well, if you know anything about the God of the Old Testament, There are those that believe that nil is that's not possible. Because, once you have the ace in the hole and you get to the modern, when's the last time these guys would have been here? Give me the modern mythology. Give me the last time they were here. Give me the last mythology when they were running around here. Well, that's basically ancient Greece. It's Zeus. I don't know how long ago it was, 10,000 years, 15,000 years. It doesn't matter, but they have clear traits. Even if it's just morals of the story trying to tell you something. There's a big difference between Zeus turning someone into a wolf and killing his children for sacrificing a child, and there's other instances where Artemis tries to sacrifice a child, and Zeus threatens to throw her out of Olympus and all kinds of stuff like that. He's not sacrificing a child. The only thing you sacrifice to Zeus is a white bull. And the only thing, in reality, the only thing sacrificing to Poseidon in the particular Greek myths is a black bull. So there are those that say that Enki or Ea is the god of the Old Testament. I don't know about that, because you're not he's certainly not doing it with Zeus around, because a god in the Old Testament makes something quite clear. He makes something quite clear. And that is, if you want to get his attention, you're going to have to kill somebody. You know, he tells Abraham to kill his son Isaac. Yeah, Zeus doesn't operate like that. I mean, basically, you have a monster in the Old Testament walking around. There's a big difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament. In fact, there's a whole big difference. At one time, they weren't even going to be put together. Old Bob Whitaker over there on Whitaker Online has talked about that. But I'm no expert on, I'm no theologian. That's where the Dr. Farrells come in. But there's a big difference between the God of the Old Testament and whatever's going on in the New Testament. And there's a big difference between the God of the Old Testament, who is considered the Jewish God, the God of Israel, and who you think of as Enlil, and to be honest with you, it could be a big difference between him and Enki too. I don't know, but I know damn well he's not Zeus. They have radical differences. So when it comes down to Enlil being a serpent or something like that, feathered serpent, no, that would be the other side of the equation. And whether or not they're brothers in a literal sense or figure, you wouldn't know anything until they land here and tell us. I can only go in a certain direction. I will entertain questions all day long, but there's so much unknown. There's no one I've talked to that have actually read the text relating to these guys. And there's very strange stuff. Very strange stuff going on, at the top of Anglosphere, even right now. You got all kinds of crazy stuff going on all across Western civilization. But when it comes down to who are the Nimrods and who are, nothing nice to us. Nothing nice to us. They usually fall under the category of, it's here, it would be here, and it would be dying. Dying when whatever is going to kill it gets here and explains it to us. You know, this is, it's not... It's almost impossible to simplify, to get more complex than that in some areas. When you start talking about different characters being multiple different names and multiple different mythologies, and what is this trying to tell us? What does this mean? The only one I've ever seen put it together in an interesting way across multiple different books is Dr. Farrell. But even that can be difficult, challenging to read. And no one will have it 100% right. You wouldn't have it 100% right until you did what the Nazis did. Lit a beacon and try to get one of them down here, get one of the Aryans down here to tell us what the hell is going on, or what happened, or what has been, when you're coming back. You know, you'd have to do something like that. Because the stuff is bizarre, and the Nazis would have been reading all about this stuff. They would have known all about this stuff. And if you don't know how many emails I have from White Rabbit saying that they think Marduk is here, is in London, and that's part of the problem when it comes to immigration. You know, someone's setting the rules and everyone's got to play by the rules. Well, that would be a rational explanation. I've seen nothing to say that they're not here, and I've seen nothing to say they are here. I can't disprove it. And you wouldn't know it unless you were in some top position of power. And maybe if you had a nuke pointing at them, maybe if you had them bent over a barrel over something, you'd have to play a game until something else got here to help you. You'd have to do something extraordinary if something like that was here. But it would be a rational explanation for all the different games, no arguing that. And I was asked a direct question, does anyone I respect believe that something like that is here? Yes. Yes. I don't want to give any names, but yeah. I'm agnostic. I don't believe anything I don't see. I realize we don't see anything. We only see one frequency. We are blind, deaf, and dumb. We are byproducts of light and sound, and we can't see a whole lot. You can fool us all day long. You can fool us all day long. But something on this planet likes a whole lot of fear, and it likes putting rabbits in consistent trance, and it likes killing a lot of rabbits. Because that's all I've ever seen in the history of the world over the past 4,000 years, a lot of death. Especially European history. Look at the European history in the past few hundred years, and it's just nothing but a bunch of death. So yeah, there are people I respect that believe that, that they're here. I don't know why they come to that conclusion. But you wouldn't see anything until the beast comes out of the pit, until the Red Dragon Revelation shows up on your doorstep. And it happens after a big war. That's when you'd see something. That's when you'd see something crazy. And I don't know the mysteries of the universe. I can only point you in a direction on this stuff. But there's a whole lot of bizarre stuff, and a lot of that bizarre stuff goes on at the top of Anglosphere. And since this podcast has gone over, I'll throw in one more thing. I was asked about the different. It has now become law in the United Kingdom, as well as Australia, that you can keep a chimera alive for more than 14 days. And they've started patenting. They're trying to copyright and. Well, I don't know about copyright, but they're creating patents for a different type of chimeras, crossing species, and it's some very, very bizarre stuff. And I was asked why, this is obviously not normal European behavior. Europeans don't normally look at little Mexican rabbits and say, I think we should cross those with cockroaches. I mean, come on, they're kind of related. We don't really do that. You might call a Mexican a cockroach or they breed like cockroaches, but you're not going to start combining their DNA. And there's some bizarre stuff going on with the groups like DARPA and the stories coming out of the DARPAs. And of course, in America, that's what we have, DARPA. Typically in America, something like that would be illegal to do. You can't keep a chimera alive for more than 14 days, but it's like in the UK or in Australia, by the time they tell you they're doing something or by the time they pass it law, they're just making it formal. In America, it's not supposed to be legal to spy on you on the internet. But anyone that knows anything knows that they've probably been doing it for years and now they're just kind of making it formal. Now they're allowed to spy on you on the internet. The president said that's necessary or something like that. But I assume they've been doing it for years and they make it formal. So I don't know why something out there is doing this, but it's a fact they are. It's a fact it's not normal stuff, that X-Men style stuff. They're going to replace part of our DNA with the DNA from an eagle and give a human eagle eyes like X-Men. It's crazy, crazy stuff. And someone out there is really doing this type of stuff. Why would you make it legal? They're really fooling with this type of stuff, which is obviously more than just a little bit dangerous. But I was asked a direct question about DARPA, and it all goes in this direction. I have no idea what the interest would be in that. And it's squarely at the top of Anglosphere. You can't really pinpoint the Germans or the Russians trying to... patenting certain types of chimeras, and I don't even know what the patents are, but they're combining humans and certain type of mammals. Very weird stuff, very strange stuff that we would not normally think of. Yeah, Europeans are mostly concerned with purity on some type of subconscious level. And, if you see them, they're little doggies, they'll worry about how pure their doggy is or how pure their cat is. It's a very odd thing. It's one of the contradictions. We don't think in terms of race, but we do think in terms of purity. We don't normally start combining different animals. And when you start talking about transhumanism, there are two types. There's the technological type, like, okay, we're gonna have a full body armor type suit, like on the Halo game, on the Xbox Halo game, we're going to have that, and that's going to assist us and make the ultimate soldier. You're going to put on this suit, and it's going to be a big, Superman-type soldier suit, a Halo suit. You get into transhumanism, you get into using technology, that's no big deal. When you start talking about technology that implants electrodes in heads, one version becomes merging humans with cyber. Full-on merging humans with computers, that becomes a little strange to me. That's not normally what we do. We just use technology, basically, typically. And of course, the elites would want that because it's control. If you can put electrodes in a soldier's head and make him the ultimate soldier and make him not fear death or make him not disobey orders, obviously that'd be something good to have around. But there's another type, and that's merging humans with animals. And that is very strange stuff. Very, very strange stuff, and that comes into DARPA. But I don't know that DARPA has ever dealt with anything other than using technology. And they go far out there with technology, really far out there, supposedly. But in my opinion, in North America, you really got to watch that, because if someone found out about it, it would be ugly stuff. It would be ugly stuff politically, when in fact you could just farm it out to somewhere in Australia or somewhere in the UK where it's totally legal. And that's how they do. It's kind of like torture. They don't torture Muslim suspects. Well, they have all kinds of other countries that'll do it for them. But every once in a while something will come out on DARPA. And this all goes, specifically to Anglo-America and Anglosphere. And one of them you can actually get online. It's pretty interesting. It's about 480 pages long. It's called Converging Technologies for Improving Human Performance. And this isn't DARPA specifically. But they're taking stuff from DARPA. They're combining nanotechnology, biotechnology, information technology, and cognitive science. And this is a report put together by the National Science Foundation in America and the Department of Commerce, of all things. And this came out like in probably 2003. You can actually look it up online. Yeah, you can get it right online, the big PDF, Converging Technologies for Improving Human Performance. And one of these talked about, there's been several of these types of reports. Many of them have been online, leaked online, and usually when something like this comes out, it is, they're trying to predict the future, or they're not trying to predict, they're telling you where things are going behind the scenes, but generally they're 10 to 20 years old, so if this comes out in 2003, you can assume that a lot of stuff they already have done, and they probably have most of it done 10 years prior, some type of thing like that. They're not going to tell you about anything until they've already done it. That's just the way they operate. It's kind of like the president says, well, we're going to spy on you on the internet. Well, he's already done it, they're just making it formal. But you're getting some wild stuff in this one. This is not the one I've looked. You can do wonderful things about PDFs. You can do searches. And I can't find what I wanted to talk to you about in this one, although it may be in here. And it was comments from DARPA about what they expect post-2012. And there's an interesting date. You'll see this date across the perspective, 2012. A variety of different fields and endeavors. And it said in 2012, they expect some members of the human family to start acting superhuman. I thought that was pretty crazy. You know, they're talking about a global population. You got some really bizarre stuff that comes out in these reports. And this one talks about, different convergent technologies. And you can look that up, but this type of merging humans and animals and all this transhumanism is not really normal behavior. It's bizarre stuff. It's bizarre stuff. And most people don't even realize what's out there or what's going on. This X-Man style, replacing genes, this gene with that gene, or, you know, it's just crazy, crazy, crazy stuff. And when you go into crazy stuff, unnatural type stuff, it leads to unnatural explanations. Because what other rational explanation could there be? And that's where you get into the talks of the feathered serpents and all this other bizarre stuff. That's where it comes in. You know, the bushes are shape-shifting serpents. And for all I know, maybe they are. Maybe it's like V as in Visitors, that show where you got they take the faces off and it's a reptilian alien underneath. I don't know. You get into some pretty bizarre stuff, and there's a lot out there. There's a lot more out there than the average person would think in any given area. But most of the chimera stuff that they're doing is not natural. We don't naturally do that. We don't naturally even think in those terms. So who's doing it and why they're doing it? I don't know. One could only imagine. And what have they done? That I don't know either. It's certainly not natural. But that is one interesting report. I was asked specifically about DARPA and what I think about DARPA and stuff like that. Well, a lot isn't known about DARPA. They farm stuff out, and some of it's benign. Their technological stuff is benign. Developing a halo suit for a soldier is benign. A halo suit that puts electrodes in the back of the head that makes you obey an order indefinitely, well, that's not benign anymore. You're crossing lines. When you start talking about combining humans with machines, or, you know, putting big chips in their heads, or taking out genes and putting it in chimerical type stuff, mixing human and animal genes, but they're doing it right in front of our face. Yeah, I mean, it's totally legal to do, and there's some bizarre stuff out there. Why they would do it, who would do it, I don't know. I don't know, but that's one report you can look up. I don't know where the DARPA stuff is about. They kick out these reports every once in a while, and some of them can be jaw-dropping on some of the statements they make. There are those of us, like yours truly, that believes a lot of it's done for effect. A lot of it's partial truth, innuendo, because they don't want anyone to know everything they're doing. But one thing that comes clear from reading this stuff, like the convergent technologies for improving human performance, on where this stuff is going, where they think it's going in 2020, and this one, of course, is almost, you know, it's 2003. This thing's probably decades old. Decades old. And you get the feeling that they're far, far ahead of stuff behind the scenes. And just waiting to roll out all kinds of stuff. Some of it good, some of it wild, some of it extremely ugly, extremely unnatural. But in this Q&A, I went over some different topics, and some of it is very, very difficult. All you can do is approach it and scratch the surface, because there is no documented. The only writers on it would have to be labeled fiction, because they don't have sources. You can't back it up. You can't back up anything on the feathered serpents or that little clay thing that you can pull up and look at. The reason you can't back it up with sources is because the sources on it haven't been released. It's not that they're not in the Sumerian text. And so that's ripe for speculation. When you talk about what governments are doing behind the scenes in science, especially at the top of Western civilization, every once in a while something gets leaked out, like in the report. This report has some interesting things in it. There's several reports out there like that that you can download online. They're sponsored by government entities. They always say some interesting things, but you never really know. You never really know. I don't even know if people in that area would know. They divide stuff out between different divisions and then put everything together in another division. A lot of it's very difficult to piece together, but obviously someone's going for something pretty big. And that the number that always comes up is 2012. So we will stay tuned, and hopefully I went over enough to answer at least the questions I get on these particular topics, but I can only send you in a direction, and I can keep it simple in a couple areas, you know, this as simple as you want to keep it. I know who Anil is, I know who Zeus is, Wotan, I know that this character shows up time and time again, but until something like that shows up and tells us what has been or what will be, we're pretty much blind, deaf, and dumb if something, if you believe something's here with us. And of course there are a great many that believe that that is the missing link. You know, that's above the APEC. That's above that there are different alien species competing for the human family, or maybe within the white rabbits, competing for control of the white rabbits. Who in the hell knows? I know that whatever's here would be dying, and whatever comes here would explain it to me. It is provocative stuff simply because of what's out there and what's going to be coming down the pipeline on the ancient aliens on the History Channel. And they're not talking about fiction necessarily. They're talking about the Vedas or the ancient Indian texts or the South American texts. Or, the last one I saw is where Wotan is Zeus, and they start talking about Zeus's lightning bolt and plasma discharge weapons and all kinds of crazy stuff like that. And it's cool stuff. It's cool stuff. They just haven't put it all together. And I'm guessing they wouldn't do that until they showed up, whoever they are. And we'll stay tuned. We'll keep going in this. I don't know when exactly this podcast is going to go out, but this one's went a little bit longer, but hopefully I can answer those. I answered those questions as best I can. There's so much uncertainty with this stuff that you're best just to keep it simple. Dr. Farrell's books are at least source. He has sources, and he's putting a lot of stuff in front of you. One side of the equation wants us to see that the bad side is actually the good side. The other side of the equation is a little more interesting, and that there's really no one out there talking about the other side of the equation, who they would be, with maybe the exception of yours truly. There's not that many out there that talk about that Enlil is Zeus. The timelines are so far out there they're not even comprehensible. How old this stuff is, how many years it goes back. When you start talking about the naming of the satellites for Mars, Phobos and Deimos, Fear and Terror, they were named in the 18th century. There's some interesting stuff there. Real interesting stuff on who knew what and who knows what. When it comes to Mars, Saturn is another. I mean, Saturn pretty much dominates the big three religions right now. The modern-day Judaism is the most Saturnarian religion anyone's ever seen, and Saturn, of course, is the planet Saturn. Astrotheology plays a big role in the Bible. It plays a big role in all the major religions, especially the modern religion, but nothing plays a role like modern-day like Saturn. And what's interesting is, in our history, what I believe is the most significant tale is when Zeus defeats Kronos, when Kronos is overthrown, and that is Saturn. And something on this planet right now is nothing but Saturn. The black cube in Saudi Arabia is Saturn. If you ever graduated from college or even high school, you wear the mortarboard, the little hat. That square symbol is Saturn. The Jewish kippah, the Jewish yarmulke, or whatever they're called, that is for the rings of Saturn. You can go on and on. I can sit here all day long, and it is Saturn. Saturn has played a huge, huge role for someone out there like Saturn, and that's probably one of the most interesting things. What it all means? Who knows? Who knows? We'll keep this conversation alive. And we'll keep going here. Next up will most likely be news and views or White Rabbit Psychology and Ecology, depending on what number this particular Q&A is. But we'll keep this conversation going. And now a word from our sponsor. Horace, I've been wearing my Undercover Lover t-shirt nonstop all summer. Haven't even took it off to wash. Well, you may want to take it off to wash, and you may want to put it away for the winter or wear it underneath your new Undercover Lover hoodie. Because we've got the deal for you. You don't need to be walking around Norway and Germany with just a t-shirt on all winter. Unless, of course, you want to wear it over top of your snowmobile suit. Yes, you go get yourself an Undercover Lover hoodie. Zip up or pull over in multiple different colors. All for a very, very low starting price of $39.95. And it's just in time for Santa Claus. And it's just in time to support our servers. Right at Christmas time. So you hop on over there to WhiteRabbitRadio.net, and you get yourself an Undercover Lover hoodie to go with your t-shirt. Yes. And now back to our regular programming. Now, in the last story of the day, or this particular podcast, whatever day you're listening to, this is the last story. I've been asked a lot of questions over this podcast. One of the funny questions is, what's the craziest thing you've ever heard? Tell us, because some of this stuff is funny. Some of this stuff is out there. Some of it's quite entertaining. Even if they don't believe it all, well, it's, you know, it gets ratings for a reason, I guess. The craziest stories you will ever hear will all involve what you think of as Roswell. But let's step back for a minute. Let's talk about Hollywood. Because there's an interesting movie in Hollywood. And the movie is called The Terminator. And Terminator had Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he's a machine, and I'll be back. And Kyle Reese is in the movie, and Kyle Reese has a baby with John Connor's mother, and that, of course, becomes John Connor's, who goes forward in the future to defeat the machines. And if you were to sit down at a table full of rabbits, whatever color or race, especially white rabbits, and ask them what the Terminator's about, what the Terminator series is about, if you could sum it up in one sentence, most of it would be say, yeah, it's a battle between the machines. A few of you would get it right. Go ahead, answer the question. What's the Terminator about? In one word, what's it about? If you were to see, in under a sentence, what's it about? Well, it's about one concept, time travel, really. Yeah, the whole movie involves time travel. They never explain how they're doing it. They never explain how they're traveling in time. You know, the beginning of the Terminator is interesting. Arnold Schwarzenegger just shows up back in the past. You know, Kyle Reese just shows up. You know, just shows up to have a baby with John Connor's mother, which becomes John Connor's. But anyways, time travel is a given. But the whole entire concept of the movie is time travel. The whole entire thing, the movie can't take place without time travel. But time travel's a given. It's never really explained. You got a wormhole. The next thing you know, you got a Terminator jumping out of it. It's kind of wild. You see this in the movie. You see time travel, but yet they're not talking about time travel. At the same time, the whole entire movie is about time travel. And the last Terminator is kind of interesting, because John Connors realizes that if he doesn't save Kyle Reese won't go back in the past, and he won't be born, and that the whole thing will be over with. It's kind of wild. But at the same time, it's about time travel again. The whole entire series about time travel. They never explain it. Well, when you get into Roswell, when you get into the Glocka, that's the famous thing, the bell, the Glock, the Glocka. I'll give it its proper German title. One of the projects, the whole entire thing, is called Project Kronos. And that's just some confusion. Are you talking about time? Because if you read, like, Percy Jackson and the Olympians, the lightning thief, Kronos is considered the lord of time. It's interesting stuff. When you get into the first battle, the battle between Zeus and the Titans, you're dealing with the battle between Zeus and Kronos. You get into this in Western mythology, it's heavy duty. And the question is, you know, if you can manipulate gravity, you can manipulate time. I mean, this is simply a scientific fact. If you can manipulate gravity, you can manipulate time. So really, one of the key prospects of Nazi Germany that I never went into is this concept that if you can manipulate gravity, you can manipulate time. It's something, in my opinion, time travel is something Europeans, the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, are uniquely qualified for. Because the first thing a white rabbit engages in is some type of historical revisionism. As if we can change the past. This is very funny. If anyone listening to this right now would just stop it and go to Stormfront and look up historical revisionism, you'll be amazed at how many 15-year-old white rabbits can actually win World War II if you allow them to. Seriously. They have it figured out how the Nazis can win. It is an instinct we have to immediately refigure the past to make it work. Seriously. Bob Whitaker on Bob's Underground Seminar, this cracks me up when he does this, he'll say that he can't forgive his ancestors for not starting the War of Succession 2 years earlier. He's a Southern gentleman, and he believes that the states' rights. He believes states should have been given their rights, and that would have avoided the war. But he can't forgive his ancestors for not starting the war 2 years earlier because the South could have won. And that is, and some believe that. But he can't forgive his ancestors for doing that. It's kind of funny. He's got it all figured out. He's going to redo the past. Now, we can't redo the past, at least we can't yet. But this is something Europeans are uniquely gifted in. Historical revisionism. It's almost instinct. It's almost we sit down and we start writing historical revisionism. The first thing you're exposed to when you become quote-unquote awakened is historical revisionism. The ism, the end-all isms, revising history, as if you could change it. Sometimes it's just a search for the truth, but once you have the truth, let's say you know some event in World War II that could have changed the whole entire event, well, if you could go back in time and change that, what would happen? What would happen if you go back and Bob Whitaker could go back in time and win the Civil War? That's kind of wild stuff. It's Terminator stuff. It's time manipulation. And Project Kronos is always referred to as if you can manipulate gravity on some level, and that's what the Roswell crash was. It was a little Nazi Horton brother flying wing with some type of neutronic engine in it. They've defeated, I already went into this. That's precisely what landed there. My thinking is it came from South America where the Horton brothers were. But I never told you any of the crazy stories, because the crazy stories don't have it coming from South America at all. No, it does not. None of the crazy stories, and the crazy stories, since I think they're crazy, who knows? They could be true, but if you can control gravity, you can immediately control time on some level. It's just a matter of learning it. It's a matter of mastering the physics, because that's what you're dealing with. You're dealing with that, and I've never went into time travel because it's too crazy. But it is something Europeans are uniquely qualified for because we have the past figured out. A 15-year-old will figure out how to make sure Hitler wins. Believe it or not, they can do that. It's funny stuff because we do it without even realizing how absurd this type of behavior is. You know, you're assuming you can travel in time. Why even bother worrying about figuring out how you could win World War II? Why even bother worrying about how to figure out how you could win the Civil War? Unless you know something on a subconscious racial level that no one else knows. It's just coming out of our racial memory that we're going to be able to time travel soon. And old Bob will be back in there. It's kind of funny. But all this stuff revolves around Roswell and the Reich, you know, because there's a kind of a mystery there. And so when it comes down to Roswell and books like Roswell on the Right, nothing like that has ever been written. Because what he's doing is he's basically taking a group out and he's thrashing them against the rocks and telling them their God is a bunch of Nazis. Yeah, your alien God is a bunch of Nazis. That a bunch of Nazis had all the patents for this stuff with the one or two exceptions. And that the reason the Nazis were allowed to look at it is Nazis. It has Nazis writing all over it. In the official government report, it looks like something Russian, that was copied from the Germans. It's all, and you can go and listen to Dr. Farrell on the Bite Show, Roswell and the Reich. He's starting that series, and I'm sure he'll say something provocative, but a book can overwhelm you. It's very difficult to debate the logic behind it. You know, the government, and when it comes to Roswell, they're framing it around two extremes. On one extreme, you have a weather balloon. On the other extreme, you have extraterrestrials. Well, that's two different extremes. And he calls it the Roswell dialectic. It's very provocative, especially when he goes about proving all the German patents and stuff like that. And it's very provocative, but also it's very controversial because he's telling someone their God doesn't exist. Now, I'm not talking about the weather balloon side of the equation. I'm talking about the alien side. And that side of the equation needs that myth. They need that myth for their New World Order. That's what I've gathered. And what he's doing is bashing their heads in. And so you're probably going to get some attention when you do that. On some level, it's very difficult to attack the facts, so they'll probably attack him personally. I don't know what else you can do. You could attack him personally, but our enemy tends to do that. That is kind of their MO. They attack people personally because they don't have the facts. For instance, if you were to quote, let's say, point out to the local branch of the Anti-Defamation League on Jewish quotes about this, about trying to wipe out European children and multiculturalism and all this stuff using this against us. If you were to show them some YouTube pieces or just their own quotes, the first thing they're going to do is attack you personally. You can't really debate it. If you can't debate something, you can only attack them personally. So I'm guessing they'll do that to him because a lot of people don't know about Dr. Farrell's books. My audience does. And my audience is big and growing. Seriously. It's pretty shocking. And it's a good thing. Thank God I talk about this, and thank God he wrote those books. Whether or not he likes that I talk about them, I don't know. But anyways, but Dr. Farrell does something very provocative in this. He lays out some stuff. And some of the most crazy stories, he didn't even go into half of it, revolve around Roswell. What the Nazis actually did there. Because it's been a known fact for quite some time, or suspicious that the Nazis were involved, based on the government's own data. And Farrell can overwhelm you with facts. He can overwhelm you with facts. Even if you assume the bullshit facts, the BS facts, pardon the French, you still end up with all fingers pointing at the Nazis. And the craziest story, of course, always involves Roswell and time travel. And you will get this from the UFO end. Well, it's humans from the future coming back. And that ends up seeping out in the UFO ends. But it's a fascinating story about humans in the future coming back through time. Because if you can control gravity, you control time. You know, someone opens up a wormhole and comes back through time, and far be it for me to understand this physics. But one of the strangest things about whatever crashed there is how strange the people looked. It's how strange the beings look. And Farrell goes into it that they had progeria. And how the groups know this, that how this came out, I don't know. That's a question in itself. But the progeria, P-R-O-G-E-R-I-A. And progeria, of course, is Hutchison-Gilford progeria syndrome, is what it's called. It's premature aging. And the word progeria comes from a Greek, progeros, meaning prematurely old. It's a disease. And so you have someone that is young, but they look quite old. And so you have something that crashes there that many believe they weren't alien, they were just humans with progeria. Crazy stuff. But if you know anything about the Glocka, if you know anything about the experiments involving the Glocka, the Bell, you know that it causes premature aging. It reduced plant life to total muck. It basically what it would take to do if you ever leave a head of lettuce in the refrigerator for a couple of weeks and you go on vacation and come back, it's going to start looking kind of gunky. Well, it did that in a matter of seconds. And so what many believe is that you're dealing with a big mystery here. You're dealing with Nazis, but what are they doing with progeria? They put a bunch of little white rabbits in a thing with progeria? Because we know that the things landed there looked a little odd. They had progeria. That's the word. They had progeria. Well, that's kind of odd. where'd you get all these little white rabbits with progeria? A handful of white rabbits with progeria, and down in South America, and then flew them up there and crashed them. What the hell is going on with this? Where are they going with this? Well, the stories all involved the basics of gravity. If you can manipulate gravity, you can manipulate time. that you end up with a John Connors like scenario. You know, Kyle Reese gets sent back in time to send a message to John Connors' mother, Mrs. Connors, and to knock her up. You end up with one of these scenarios, and that's where the crazy stories come in on Roswell. That Nazis in the future opened this thing up where they could manipulate gravity, and I don't know how far in the future. Some speculate only 15, 20 years. And shoved it back through time, shoved it back into 1945 or whenever Roswell happened. It was actually 1947. The Nazis in the future basically flew back in time and crashed there in 1947. That either they crashed a bunch of little white rabbits with progeria to send a message, or they themselves caught progeria because the thing wasn't perfected yet. They hadn't perfected time travel. You're getting two different scenarios, but both of them go about the same thing. It all involves Nazis and time travel. Crazy stuff. Real crazy. But that's the craziest story I've ever heard. They all involve Roswell and the different incidences of Roswell involving general time travel and Nazis. You know, the alien side, there is a segment that believes it was humans from the future. Well, what type of humans? How'd they get that technology? And of course, everything, you know, the technology and all the overwhelming facts, most people believe it was a Nazi. I believe it was Nazis doing problem, reaction, solution with the Anglo-American elites. Because how freaked out would you be if a bunch of Nazis landed at Roswell? Or crashed at Roswell? How freaked out would you be? That they could get to you and you couldn't get to them. Are they in South America? That's what I thought. But my thinking is flawed. Because once you go that route, you might as well open up a whole bigger can of worms. What are they looking for? We've already went to what they're looking for. Well, are there any other planets around here that are involved in this ancient war? Are there any other planets that they sure, there's planets, there's satellites. Is there a possibility of ruins there, of real high-tech ruins that they could survive in once they figure out how to get into? Sure. Sure. One of the funny movies coming out is Iron Sky. Iron Sky is about Nazis on the dark side of the moon. The funny thing is, if you know anything about the Sumerian text or any of this stuff, even when it comes into Greek mythology, you know, when Zeus is battling the Titans, that's going on out there. That's going on in from these different satellites. It's going on from the moon. All this stuff is connected. It's kind of wild. Ripe for speculation, ripe for crazy stories. But that is one of the stories about Roswell, that Nazis in the future pulled open a can of worms, a wormhole, just shot it back through time, sending a message to Nazis at the time. You know, Nazis in 1967 are going to send a message to Nazis in 1947. Well, how do you do that? Well, there's one simple way to do that. You do it like they do it in the Terminator. You go back and you tell them. You send them a message. Tell them Project Kronos is on the ball. We're going back. We're starting to manipulate the timeline. I'm sure the next event was coming forward to about 2009, grabbing a bunch of little skinheads off the street, giving them each an aluminum baseball bat, then going back to about, who knows, maybe 7500 BC or 5000 BC, and then getting a jump on Ol Hashem as he comes through a Stargate or something. You could write endless movies about this, and the truth will probably be stranger than fiction once you start going in this direction. But those are all the craziest stories I've ever heard involve Roswell and involve Nazis and involves time travel. Because on some level, if you can control gravity, you can control time. And to answer last question, what do I mean by they have an imperfect physics? Well, if you can control gravity, you can control time. But there, if you have a flawed physics, you might have some loopholes there. You might have a serious flaw that can be exploited. What happens one morning if you wake up, like in the Terminator movie, Hollywood shows all this crazy stuff. This podcast is no crazier than sci-fi, but anyways, what happens one morning if the Terminator wakes up and the Terminator has pink rabbit physics, and John, Kyle Reese goes back in time to create John Connors, but the Terminator can't follow him. The Terminator can manipulate gravity, but he can't. There's a flaw in his physics that won't allow him to manipulate the fabric of space-time, which should be theoretical. If you can manipulate gravity, you should be able to at least figure out how to manipulate the fabric of space-time, in theory. That's pretty crazy stuff. But what happens if the Terminator can't follow him? Well, sooner or later, John Connors is going to come up and he's going to whop you. Sooner or later in the timeline, whatever that means, sometime in the future, you're over with. You're done. You just don't realize it yet. You're terminally screwed. You're SOL. And that's really what it means. So when they talk about pink rabbit physics not holding up to white rabbit physics, what's that cryptic for? What that is cryptic for is that one side of the equation, in theory, would be able to manipulate the fabric of space-time. In other words, they won, you just ain't seen it yet. While the other side of the equation would be terminally screwed. It's just a matter of time. And time is the question, right? And so it becomes rather fascinating. And it all goes back to Roswell. One side of the equation, our enemies have their New World Order about little aliens in Roswell, and it's screwed. It's totally screwed. The other side of the equation, we're just interested in the whole truth. That's all I'm interested in, the whole truth. And these guys have obviously done something to survive. They've done something. And it goes back to one stream. It goes back to paleo ancient civilizations. It goes back to ancient wars. It goes back to mythologies, or so-called mythologies. It goes back to what's true and what's myth. What is myth, and when are myths coming to life, and what does this mean? It's all the things you'd ever want to know. Even if you're awakened racialist, or even if you're a little asleep white rabbit, who we are, where do we come from, all that kind of good stuff. They were asking big questions, and they were doing exactly what you'd want to do to get a big answer, if there is any such answer. And so we sit on this podcast, and we will go forward. And this one went kind of long, but I told you that. It's hard to talk about all this kind of crazy stuff. I try to keep it down an X-mini podcast of crazy stuff and blend it in with geopolitics. And what I really want to talk about is white rabbit psychology. And that'll be the next podcast. But that is the crazy story. Will be Roswell. And whatever happened there will be a crazy story. Now, whether it involves time travel, I have no idea. But all the crazy stories involve Nazis shooting it back in time, communicating with other Nazis. No different than the Terminator. The Terminators are going back in time. John Connors or Kyle Reese is going back in time to create John Connors. They're sending messages in the future by sending a message into the past. They're sending a messenger into the past to send a message into the future. It's fascinating stuff. It's a fascinating concept. Something I believe our race would be geared for like no other. Why? Because we're the best revisionists ever. We'll figure out an exact way to win some historical war. Although you can't go back and fight, you can't go back in history and fight. Or maybe you can. Maybe old Bob Whitaker is having himself frozen. That's what he's doing when he dies. They're going to freeze him. Because one morning he wants to be brought back to life so he can go back and win the Civil War. That's funny stuff. But no less serious. But that is the last question I was asked. That's the last question I answered. What do they mean by pink rabbit physics not being able to hold up to white rabbit? It's simple. They can't manipulate the fabric of space-time. If it's true, that's what it would mean. One side can manipulate the fabric of space-time. The other side is screwed. Screwed. Their God, if he's here, is screwed. Screwed royally. Done. Adios, amigos. The whole big enchilada, and who knows what it could fully mean. Other than crazy. Crazy. And as this planet starts heating up, as the fur starts actually flying, the opening acts of World War III, I don't mind talking about it because we're going to find out what they did shortly thereafter, or at least start the process of finding out. And it's high time we learn. So if anyone's listening to that, all your neighbors, everyone alive right now, they're all going to find out one way, shape, manner, form, and sooner rather than later. So I'll be back with you in the next podcast. We are now at the end of another episode of Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. And this podcast is, of course, all as always, dedicated to practical politics. But I'd like to take this time to thank you for tuning in to another episode. On behalf of the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, it is yours truly, Horus the Avenger. And I'll be back with you in another episode in the near future. Until then, thank you for listening.